Okay, see, that's when you know I'm losing it. Where are my headphones at?
Where are my headphones at?
They're on your head, idiot.
Really, bro? Put the drugs down, bro.
I literally did not know where my headphones were.
It's crazy there.
It's not good. See how different we sound?
Okay. All right. All right. I do like that.
Yeah, you're a little clearer, which is good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, that's a shotgun mic. So you probably could back up off it a little bit.
Yeah.
So you don't break the... Like, if you're about like that, that'd be good.
That's better.
Yeah. Because then I can just turn you up a little bit.
So I can actually sit back, sit having, like, in my face, like yeah. I have been.
Yeah.
You don't like me when I was, like, nose to it? Zoom tight. The microphone picked that up good.
Oh.
You sounded good. That sneeze sounded good.
Dude.
We can almost... Is that a drop now?
Allergy season is not going well.
I can't tell if I've got, like, some allergy issue because... The babysitter keeps having gum through outside and putting all that pollen on the car seat, and it just affected me somehow. It's
right.
Like concentrating because it's out there in the freaking McCordsville, and it's just for some reason like the pollen count must be outrageous out there, and I'm not used to that type of issues right. from out there. Or I'm getting a cold because of these snot nosed brats that Gunther's around. By the way, Gunther went through her first freaking cold this whole weekend.
Oh, really?
Yep, that was fun.
That's pretty good. She's pretty young to have her first cold.
Yes, she is. It was rough.
She seems old to have her first cold, is what I meant to say.
Oh, because my...
But I don't know when kids are supposed to have colds.
I don't know either. Because most of her social interactions were anti-social libertarians, you know?
Right, like, yeah.
Kids!
Right. I'm the only one that says hi to her. The rest of them are like, I might have one of these, and I don't believe in procreation because I'm an atheist, and I don't want to bring a kid into this world. Why would I ever want to improve the species by bringing in an intelligent young libertarian when I could just, Anyways.
Yeah. Or you get ones like Michael Schultes, like, you should have some other ones. You can do this with it. And he starts talking about...
You can do this with it.
Yeah. That's, thanks to Michael, I've got all these nice little tax forms. Oh, sorry. Speaking of things with the babysitter, too, Lacey has lost her freaking mind.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
You're on tape, you know.
What? Oh, so... I think Lacey has lost it.
Why?
Well, she's so used to me being at home and taking care of some things at the house.
Right.
Well, it hasn't happened all last week. So she'd get home. Then I get home. What's for dinner? I don't know.
Oh, I see.
And then she's hungry, and she keeps looking at me. But, like, my brain goes, like, I'm hungry, too. What do you want? I don't know. And then when she says, I don't know, for, like, the third time, my brain hits survival mode, right?
Uh-huh.
And then I just make some just vegetables in a pot and just take some meat out. Or, I hit ketosis and I just, screw it. I won't eat for 36 hours. I'm good.
So what you're saying is she's not doing her wifely duties. Is that how you wanted to put that, Perry?
And you can tell, like, she's like,
kind of what you were saying.
You can tell she's sitting there like, one of us needs to get rid of her job again. It's like, as you tell, she does not want to sit at home.
One of us really needs to stay home from work, and Harry, quit your job.
She's like, no, I love it there. I'm not leaving.
Yeah, but see, now's when the relationship wait starts.
Uh-huh.
Because you're like, I don't feel like cooking. Let's go to El Rodeo for the 15th time this week.
See, I've hit that before, though.
Uh-huh.
So my other problem is like the Brett introduced me to the ketogenic intermittent fasting. So when she pulls that, I can just end up eating I can get all my calories at lunch, and I'm fine for the rest of the day.
Well, aren't you special?
Yes, I am. Okay. But it's okay. I really just, feels like this is dinner because she just, like, looks at me like, ugh. Which also was hilarious, right? Because I went out drinking Saturday night, got really drunk, had a hangover, and watched Lacey had to deal with Gunther for 8 hours. Hilarious. She was looking at me like, I just need a break.
Such a cruel laugh.
Yes, it is.
Excuse me. I know I promised a couple listeners I wouldn't belch anymore, but here we are.
Maybe we should just like a donate button. Every time you belch, you have to donate to the Japanese for Congress fund.
Come pry that money off my cold dead hands.
I just still like the idea of the swear jar. Every time you swear, it's a quarter to Rupert's kids.
Well, you do that. They need that money. You go for it, man.
I don't really swear much on the podcast. What about you?
I don't swear that much. I don't swear that much.
Writing $100 checks to Rupert every week.
Yeah, no, we're not going to do that. Nah. Rupert's doing great. He doesn't need my money. Oh, man. See, listen, I sound like sex. Hey there.
You?
Do I sound different?
You sound normal.
I sound normal?
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Other than that, like that fake voice you give yourself on the podcast.
Hey, everybody. It's not a fake voice. It's called speaking with energy.
Also, did Johnny Rocket get a new microphone? Because he sounds so much better on his newer podcast.
I'm not sure. He used to record in a studio.
Sounds better.
And he used to record in an actual, like, recording music studio. That's where they did the podcast originally. Then he got an ATR 200, an Audio-Technica 2100, which is really good. But then I think he upgraded to an SM7B, which is what I've normally been using.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm going to use this for a little bit. So,
well, I'm just saying, when I was listening to him, I was like, man, it's just so much different.
Yeah. So I think that's what it is. Check 1, 2. Hey, everybody. Let's take that down just a little bit. All right. Great. Thank you. Welcome.
There you go. Now you got that young spangle voice.
Hey. Well, you know why I have that voice, right? Is because when I worked at WXNT, I would record a traffic report 50 to 100 times until it sounded like an actual traffic report.
Let me get this straight. I inform you that, hey, bruh, I barely get on Facebook anymore. I've deleted the app. I barely get on that sucker. I barely at any time inside the wall message group. Message me on the Facebook. Hey. I'm going to be late being here. Like, really, bro? Really? You could have got to Discord? You got Discord and do Goofy Watch?
I just think it's funnier if I do it that way. Wonder if this new chair. Oh, yeah. Oh, buddy.
Yeah. It's not as cool as PewDiePie. But can your chair do this? And he goes, like, all the way back.
No.
He sells chairs. He sells them.
Does he actually sell chairs?
Yeah, he's like an affiliate link. So like if you went and got the DX Racers, or like if you got like whoever you got this thing, you get an affiliate link and they bought the thing, just like if you had an Amazon affiliate link.
I get the Staples.
Which I set up the thing. I just got to get the – I got an affiliate link for – if you buy stuff on Woot.com and you get through the low-key wall makes for every $7 shirt, we make a percentage.
So
if you like the cool shirts I wear on Low Key Wall or walk around those Woot shirts, you too can buy them through our cash and link.
Let's see. Delete.
What?
I was deleting you from the internet. I have access now. They gave me access to the internet, and I just deleted you. All gone. All gone, Harry.
I have access to the internet.
They give me access to the internet, and you're gone. I deleted you.
I was hanging out with the elders of the internet.
All right. Let's see here.
Woop, 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 woop. Hey, everybody. I don't know about you, but I personally just got the Discord update on Linux.
Mm-hmm.
Woot. Woot. I don't know why it gave me this thing. It's been open all day. Never said anything about an update. And I get here. Oh, you need an update.
Don't blame me for your subpar equipment.
Anyway, so at work, I'm getting ready to get a...
You were so mad. You just got so mad.
Getting a stack of MacBook with like the Retina MacBooks because... Yeah. My boss was like, well, because I wanted to go look. It's like, I just need some sort of like machine. I sit there in the meeting. I just need some machine for the conference room computers. I don't want to go out and buy a new computer. Do we have anything laying around like a laptop but a bad battery or something that we just put in the conference room, right?
Right.
It doesn't go anywhere. And if it has a bad battery, it definitely won't go anywhere, right? It will stay plugged in. He goes, yeah, I've got some old MacBooks, some of the ones with the bad batteries in it that, you know, because Mac won't let them replace them. They just start all laughing. I'm going to fix those batteries, sell 5 of those MacBooks, and buy some else.
How could you?
Buff up my IT budget. It's going to be like, where'd you get all this stuff from? I sold those MacBooks, bro.
Kanye's, that seems racist.
Freaking Kanye, stealing my swagger. Oh, man, have you ever seen black people change on somebody for so long? Well, you can't leave the plantation.
For so little?
Yeah, for so little.
Oh, we're going to talk about it tonight.
You cannot leave the plantation.
It's amazing. They're not happy about it at all.
It's freaking.
And by they, I mean those people.
Oh, man.
That one.
It is hilarious. Watch them do that, you know. Then I post mine. I get nothing but chuckles. I'm like, what? How dare y'all? Where's my hate? Where's my headlines?
You need to start tweeting out that you like Candace Owens.
I can't. We were on different sides during Gamergate, so I can never.
One ideological misstep and she's done forever for you, huh?
I don't know. I just feel like you almost want to ask like some World War II veteran if after World War II at any time could you work together with a German Nazi? Even though war's over, it's been years. Now, granted, you know.
I mean, gassing Jews and Gamergate seem like different.
Okay, but one's up here, one's down here. Okay. Right.
I'm just going to go on a limb and say.
Millions of sock accounts were deleted. Okay? Millions.
Millions of sock accounts.
Yeah, but I feel you. Yeah, but I just, you know, we were on different sides of that war. I can agree with some of the stuff she said, but, you know, to me, she's not far right enough. She's still a commie. Because she doesn't say that taxation is theft, and all taxation is theft, no matter what you get down to it. And if you're not that, you're not a true libertarian. If you're not, I can teach you, okay? But I have to charge. My taxation brings other posts.
Sorry. What? Why does... I need to watch this. Why do stupid people not realize they're stupid?
Right enough, she's still a commie. Because she doesn't say that taxation is theft, and all taxation is theft, no matter what you get down to it. And if you're not that...
Okay, Roger.
Yep. Man. This funny thing about like the whole like Reinhold and Roger thing. It's like he has like a playbook that he does to people.
Roger.
Yeah, and he did the same. And I told Ryan, I was like, he did the same thing to Denise when Denise was hitting him with facts. I'm done. What do you mean you're done? I thought you wanted to have a conversation. How can you be done? What happened to the conversation?
Yeah. No, that's the thing. So here's how I would classify arguing with Roger. Okay, here's kind of how I'd put Roger in general, because we had a conversation about this. I think Roger is an intelligent person, so I don't mean to besmirch his intelligence, but this is the best analogy to, like, Roger, in terms of podcasters, libertarian thinkers, is like a prop comic. So, prop comics are pretty looked down upon in the stand-up community,
mm-hmm.
because they're using gimmicks, mm-hmm. so they aren't as good of writers, so they don't learn how to use their brain and their writing skills as much as a George Carlin,
Dave Chappelle,
right? Because there's no gimmicks with those guys. Yeah. It's just their voice, their words, and that's what they have to make you laugh.
Yeah,
maybe a gesture, and you know, so they're just a little. Like, they're just a little weak when it comes to certain aspects of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Roger's props are logical fallacies and ad hominem attacks.
Mm.
And it's just kind of like...
Here's your sign.
Remove that, mm-hmm. you know? And maybe, you know, you'll... Remove that and you'll be good. So...
I just want to know who made him king, and he can declare when conversations are done. No one else.
Exactly, right.
No one else.
Yeah.
No one else can declare when a conversation is done.
Yeah, I don't know. He's Roger fundamentally is a decent human being and a good person. He's just not fun to argue with.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah. So I don't see that.
I definitely see that, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, Roger, podcast Roger, like, if I would have just heard everything from, like, podcast Roger, I would never speak to Roger Paxton.
Right.
But I know Porkfest Roger, hanging out with Jessica and Roger, like, right. Hanging out with his kids, hanging out at Porkfest. That's the Roger I like. And if that's the Roger I like and I can't listen to podcast Roger because that makes me not like other Roger, man, I'm sorry, bro.
That's sort of where I'm at. That's where I'm at, too, yeah.
I like this Roger too much to let this other Roger, you know, ruin that, you know? It's like, but it's the same way. I don't really think it does listen to Wall, so
no,
I'm sure Wall, Harry, he hates.
No, not anymore. And no, he always says super complimentary things about you.
Okay, that's good.
But he just, you know, he totally took out of context what I said and, you know, gloats in the League of Liberty group that we've got. And it's just, I don't know. The messages from my audience, my Patreon subscribers, has been pretty like, don't do that show anymore. So
yeah, they prefer another show, another Wall show, another Spangle show, you know, or Toughen Your, because I think what it comes down to, I think they would prefer you build yourself back up in order to do another Cost episode, to be able to have the mental fortitude to do that another Cost, and then to go on that show and not have the mental fortitude because you have to go through this fight.
Right.
With a friend, is like, dude, build yourself up and do another Cost.
Yeah. No, and I've got to...
Like, doing the Cost is like, yeah, I don't even know how you do them. I don't know how to... Because I can't even sit through most of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Amanda story, I lived. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't even... it wasn't as traumatic. My mom is... Get it.
You know, and if we were, you know, because like, because basically, like, the if we were in the UK and could get out, you know, Alfie's parents on, that's a that would be a Cost episode. That whole aspect of the whole other thing, like that. But it's just
go ahead. Sorry.
No, it just, you know, I'm just sure that the people who enjoy the product that you produce,
right,
prefer you to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or prefer you to study more here, or to do another, crank out another episode, or, you know, just
that it ruined my whole week last week in a way.
Yeah.
You know, and I shouldn't let it, but it does, because it's, you know, you're being publicly humiliated by a friend for what reason and over something that you don't believe and that you didn't say. Like, I was clearly, as I was editing it, because I had to edit, so I had to re-listen to it and do the edit and put the four tracks together.
Damn.
I was clearly being sarcastic. I was like, okay, Roger, whatever. Yes, that's exactly what I believe. Like, if you go back and you listen to it, that's exactly what I was saying. But, you know, he didn't hear that because it's hard to pick up on that when everybody's talking over each other. But whatever. I don't care. Let's not rehash it. No need to.
Exactly.
We've moved on.
Moving on. Moving freaking forward. Just, it's okay. Batman left the Justice League for a reason.
Yeah. No, I just, I'm in the mode where I'm trimming out literally everything because this show here, I had all our prep done on Sunday.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to try and do more of. And then I spent all day yesterday reading it. I probably, shout out to Ryan Ripley, especially for buying me a printer through our Amazon wish list, because that allowed me to, you know, I printed out 100 pages easily.
Nice.
And then read all that over the last couple of days, highlighted everything. You know, that took 4 hours of reading last night, 2 hours on Sunday, and then 3 hours of reading today, just to kind of feel like I had enough knowledge to cover everything tonight for just this show. You know, so that's a tremendous amount of time that I feel needs to go into prepping for a show, so I can say things with confidence and have all of the information that I need. So it's like, all right, I want to go hang out with friends but this is more important to me. You know, like, friends are important, but it also is like, this is the, I've got a goal. You know what I mean? Like, yep. And the goal is to do 2 quality shows a week. So, all right.
Yep. They need you to put in work to help inspire me, because with me and my new job, my schedule's all messed up. I'm not used to, be able to stay up to like 1 a.m. looking at different things, and can't now.
Yeah.
It's okay. I've learned to sit in the bathroom and read articles.
All right. Here we go.
Yeah, I made sure there's Wi-Fi in the bathroom now. I did that. Yeah, it wasn't Wi-Fi before in the bathroom at work. Yeah. You're welcome.
All right. Here we go. Oh.
Ooh,
yeah.
Ooh. You know what? Can I refill first?
Go for it.
Whatever. You got like a 30-minute intro.
30-minute intro. So go ahead.
Of course, a shotgun microphone. Probably pick one.
We have new chairs in the studio, which I don't know if we'll mention it or not, but Staples had a crazy good deal on chairs, and I got these like half off. So I got us 2 chairs. So because last week after I stood up, I couldn't walk. Like, I always like hobble away from the table after we're done with the podcast. So I was like, you know what? Thanks to all the people who offset the cost of the trip, because I was able to buy 2 new chairs for super cheap, which I wouldn't have been able to.
My
all right.
Ass thanks all of you people.
Harry's ass thanks you. So here we go. Okay. All right. Let's take that down a bit. Thank you for... Wow, that was loud. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We bring you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves while putting people before political parties. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective with the goal of leaving you better informed. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, where Stone is doing great with all of our memes, doing a great job. And subscribe on Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. In exchange for supporting our program, we give you all kinds of bonus content and free stuff. Thank you to our Patreon subscribers. I appreciate it so much. You're allowing me to take 2 trips this spring and summer, which we'll talk about in just a moment. This show is crowdsourced, so you can send us news with the hashtag WALNews or in the Facebook group and Discord channel. We are always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@WeAreLibertarians.com. We'll read one of your questions at the end of the show. So please be warned that this show is raw, unedited, and authentic, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive. Now, we're going to cover tonight Alfie Evans, we're going to talk about North Korea, we're going to talk about Kanye, we'll give you a little Iran update. What else? 23andMe, the breakthrough DNA technique that led to the Golden State Killer. Very interesting. So, with me, as always, is Harry Price. Harry, how are you?
Going good.
I should turn on your microphone. How are you?
I'm going good. I like to thank everyone for these chairs, once again.
Yeah, so we have 2 new chairs, which they're nice, comfortable office chairs. I sit in these a pretty fair amount. I sit in this spot, and Harry doesn't sit there as much, but he loves to complain about the chairs.
Sure do. Especially when if the episode stayed around an hour and a half, I probably wouldn't have that much of a problem.
Right.
But when they start getting to 2, 3, 4, but with these new chairs, man,
That was very Abdul of you, by the way. I saw Abdul as you were mocking me. And it's way past time. So this is the kitchen table that I grew up doing my homework on. I won it in my divorce. My mom gave it to me as she bought a new table and I got this. So these chairs are like nice chairs. They're Amish. They're wood. They're very hard. And so they're just not comfortable. And so when you're sitting on them for a while, it's not great. So the little Depot known as Staples. I went in for a $2 clipboard, and I walked out with two chairs and a clipboard, two clipboards, actually. And all of that is possible because of our Patreon subscribers. This is the rare splurge that I ever spend on a set. I'm able to do that, A, because of our Patreon subscribers, and B, because of all the people that have helped fund my two trips. I'm going to Porkfest in June, and I am going to the National Libertarian Convention in July. That Sunday, Monday plan, if you're a listener, on getting together with all of us and hanging out. The people who have donated, Craig DaCosta, Christy Avery, let's not say her name, Todd Singer, I know that I'm missing someone, and I apologize. I should have written this down, but I don't think I am. I tripped myself up on my own brain fart. But thank you guys for offsetting the cost of the trip, because it is it's not fully offset yet, but we're getting close, and that has been really it's been really nice. And I thank you guys for it, because it costs several hundred dollars a month to run this. You guys cover the cost through Patreon. The reason that I ask for Patreon subscriptions is that it is expensive to run We Are Libertarians. And frankly, I put a lot of time into this. And if you get something out of it, then I'd love for you to become a Patreon subscriber. Because if we didn't have Patreon subscribers, the show wouldn't exist. So if you like it, first and foremost, you should support it. Because in the age of new media, that's how it's going to work. There's never going to be, at least in my opinion, some great big conglomerate that's going to come and say, "We are libertarians, we want you to do this, and we'll give you a boatload of cash to do this show." Even if they did, they would never let us do the show that we want.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
This.
Yeah. Well, they would want us to do things like how well I shaved my my beard and my mustache last week with my Harry's razor.
No, you'd be a Dollar Shave Club person.
Oh,
no,
yes.
I have no
problem. Sorry, I mean,
I have no problem doing advertising, but once you start getting into the corporate radio world, you start getting restrictions on what you can and can't talk about. Opinions become, you probably shouldn't do that because blah, blah, blah.
And, you know, and the worst thing, yeah, and just the things, and you, also the breaks, heart
right.
breaks and stuff like that. And, don't cover that story, too. Ooh, by the way, that story you want to cover, that's our sister station. You're
right.
Doing that one.
Right, yeah. So there is a lot that goes into We Are Libertarians, and you guys help me pay for it, and I thank you so much. We may sound a little different. We're using a couple new mics. I am I'm not losing my voice, at least I hope not. But last Thursday, my voice was so weak because of, I think, stress or dehydration or whatever, but I was glad that James Neese ended up canceling on me because he had a candidate for him. And Miranda was supposed to come on the show, and she canceled because it was her last night before she went on house arrest. Probably shouldn't have said that, but she won't care. And so I wasn't even really up to do the show because my voice was so weak. So we're using some different mics, so we may sound a little different, so I don't have to push my voice as much. So hopefully we sound nice. I hope we sound good. You said I sound the same.
Yeah, you sound like you usually do when you're walking around. Usually you do something to the microphone to give yourself a little bit more bass, you know, when, you know, on the, when you, so podcast Spangle sounds different than like Liberty and Chill Spangle.
Right.
You know, and that's what I'm saying. You sound like Liberty and Chill Spangle. Like you're right there in front of me instead of like that, oh, that's podcast Spangle.
Yeah.
Adding that fake bass.
Well, welcome to We Are Libertarians. My name is Chris Spangle. You know, you push it from the diaphragm. That's how you'd speak on the mic. You got to talk with the energy. You got to talk loud and quick.
Well, okay. I like the shotgun microphone because I'm able to lay and sit back in the chair. And so I appreciate it. I like this different mic, even though you keep changing my mic every like two, it feels like every 2 months now.
I like to tinker.
Okay. No. Hey. You're talking about someone who's like, you know, boots, you know, computers and mess with computers all day.
Yeah.
I love tinkering. So then this is your nerd stuff. So
I haven't fiddled with it much lately because I really like the sound of it. I think it sounds good. I think functionally our equipment's right where it needs to be. So yeah, I mean, we stream live, to our Patreon subscribers at the $10 and up level on the Mevo camera,
mm-hmm.
which was glitchy early on, and I have to apologize to the Mevo people because they did an update that really like fixed whatever the problem was, and
it works. Apologize to them. Their stuff was broke. Broke stuff was broke.
But it works great now. And our sound is good, so yeah. But I still want to let you know we have an Amazon wish list at the bottom of WeAreLibertarians.com. And our friend Shira Newman sent us a few cords, and I want to thank her for doing that. One especially that I love is a long-ass printer cord.
Oh.
So I can print from my chair way over there, like little Rush Limbaugh sitting in my chair printing, going duddle up.
You don't have a Wi-Fi printer? I got a Wi-Fi printer. I got my printer like sitting on the other side of like my entertainment center, so I can like print anywhere in the house and print to it.
It is a Wi-Fi printer, but I don't know how to set it up, so I just didn't.
All right, so back to boomers. That's boomer mentality.
Here's the thing. Yeah, I just bought a longer cord. I fixed it.
Got that long. Okay, now the funny thing about like the long ass cable, right? Because everyone loves the long ass cable, right? I had a problem with an access point last week because, right, like, for some reason, just the jack that it was at, for some reason, wherever it was going in the ceiling, it was a 10-100 port.
Right.
Freaking, everyone hates 10-100. They want gigabit connection, right?
What is a good one? I don't know what's the opposite?
Gigabit.
Okay.
Gigabit. 10 times, you know.
Okay.
And the next ones are 10 gigabits, but there's no 10 gigabit ones out yet. So in order to fix this issue, I just made a long ass cable and just ran a long ass cable from another spot and dragged a long ass cable across.
Sometimes you just need an LAC.
Yeah.
It takes care of it.
And like the people like saw me drag it across the cubicles. They're like, what's this for? Fast internet. Oh. Go on.
Faster internet.
And I hooked it up, and they've loved it ever since.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have noticed in the last year, I am getting less and less technologically advanced. And Aaron says this, too. There are several people that I've asked, like, they're in their mid-30s, and they're just like, yeah, technology's starting to confuse me. So I wonder if that's like if you're in your mid-30s, and you're starting to get confused by technology, too. Share in the Facebook group so we know we're not alone.
And if you're in your mid-50s and the technology doesn't confuse you, I'll see you there, Reinhold.
All right. So we have a very serious subject, enough fun and games for the show here. Yes, Harry, you were about to say something.
No. Like I said, I'm sniffling because of like the, I don't know if I'm getting a cold because Gunther got her first cold this weekend, or, you know, just from like taking her to the daycare and they've got her like out in the boonies of McCordsville and I'm, you know, the freaking pollen and hay fever are some different.
Covered in prairie dust.
Yeah, prairie stuff, yeah. You know, which is a good thing. It's like most people, it's like I get to pass, like I drive up to McCordsville and I pass Tim's Bakery all the time. And if you're a McCordsville or Fortville person, you know about Tim's Bakery and you're awesome.
All right. So, yes, the allergies are killing us here in Indiana. Oof, it's not good. All right, Harry, let's get to the subject. Yep. The first one's a tough one. And you are a parent of a child. Do you want to say how old?
She'll be actually a year old this Cinco de Mayo.
Okay, so almost a year old.
Yep.
And this is just a really difficult case. I mean, to me, it's a very simplistic case in some ways in the legal aspect, but once you really dive into the details of the Alfie Evans case, there doesn't seem to be a clear-cut... it's just... sucks. Like, there's no way around it. I think that something like this gets so blown out of proportion and people don't actually study into any of the details. And as I kind of went through the details this weekend, it didn't make it any easier. I mean, the question for me, the conclusions didn't change, but it certainly is a tough case. So Alfie Evans passed away this past week, but he first started showing symptoms. He was born in April of 2016, I believe it was, April or May of 2016. And he was just like any other kid, but he wasn't reaching milestones like most other kids. So there was the parents were starting to suspect that maybe something wasn't firing on all cylinders. And then in December of 2016, he had a seizure and they went to the ER, and the doctor at the ER, according to The parents said that Alfie was just lazy and a late developer. And they were like, no, something's wrong. And so they were there for about 11 days undergoing testing and treatment. And it became clear during scans that the only brain activity that Alfie had was when he was having a seizure. And those initial seizures basically were so severe that it caused a catastrophic degradation of his brain tissue. And, you know, this means that he was never going to have taste, touch, any senses, or really any brain activity again. So they went about a year beyond that, even though initially it was very severe, but it just became progressively worse. The neurological condition was never diagnosed. They still don't know exactly what he had, but the seizures kept destroying his brain tissue. And by December of 2017, the doctors knew there was absolutely no hope in Alfie recovering. 70% of his tissue had been destroyed to the point that all that remained inside of his skull was water and spinal fluid. And the seizures, as I said, were the only time that his brain lit up. And I think this is kind of the cruelest part on nature's part. He still could open his eyes and smile. So the parents, I think, had more hope than the doctors. That's obvious in this situation. So the doctors decided in December of 2017 that the course of treatment was to remove him from the ventilator and the feeding tubes, basically to let him starve to death and essentially kill him, to euthanize him. And the parents disagreed. His parents, Tom Evans, and the doctors argued that it was grave, there isn't a cure, there's no way to really make him any more comfortable, and so it's unkind and inhumane to keep him alive. And they should agree to remove him from life support. But Tom Evans, especially, and Kate James were his parents. They're 20. Tom's now 21. He's a devout Catholic. And they didn't want to see their son put to death. You know, they were still much more hopeful about his prognosis and hoping for a miracle. And they disagreed with the doctors on the course of treatment. And they believed in the sanctity of life. And so they're religious values, their belief in their child's prospects were different. And so they decided to seek out the hospital in Vatican City that offered Charlie Gard treatment. And this was all kind of going on at the same time. And the Bambino Gesù Hospital in Vatican City offered to bring Alfie to the hospital. They had made the same offer for Charlie Gard. And the United Kingdom passed. Charlie Gard died with a mitochondrial issue. Basically, his mitochondrial DNA wasn't reproducing, and so his brain, his kidneys, his organs weren't getting the energy needed because his body wouldn't produce mitochondria. And eventually, he passed away. And they wanted to go do some experimental treatment at this hospital in Vatican City. And the United Kingdom said no, and Charlie Gard passed away. The same with Alfie Evans. There was no cure. There was a doctor in Munich that was willing to do some experimental treatment, and their plan essentially was to leave the hospital in Liverpool, take him to the Vatican City, and either bring that doctor from Munich down or go see the doctor in Munich. The doctors argued that he should die with dignity, which I think is a ridiculous phrase. I don't think that means anything. That's one of those phrases that everybody says, but nobody actually knows what it means. And the parents wanted to go somewhere else. So the hospital went to the courts. And in England, they passed a law in 1989, something called the Children Act. And the hospital basically said that Alfie needed to be taken off of ventilation and that the parents didn't understand what was best for their child and they were downright condescending, if you really read a lot of the reports. And they wanted to remove parental rights from Tom and Kate so Alfie could be removed from ventilation. And in the UK, the law is that when parents and doctors disagree on the best treatment, courts settle the dispute. And the hospital used the 1989 Children Act, which allowed the state to intervene when the parents are deemed a risk to the child's well-being. So the hospital argued that the parents were a risk to the child's well-being, so they should be allowed to put Alfie to death. Okay? So the parents wanted to seek more treatment at a different hospital. The hospital wanted to put Alfie to death. The courts ruled 2 months later that the parents would put Alfie at risk for harm. And in the next month, an appeals court, the Supreme Court of the UK, and the European Court of Human Rights agreed with that ruling. His parents appealed a second time, and the courts in the Supreme Court and the appeals court said, no, we're not going to do Groundhog's Day again. You're just going to get the same result if you keep asking. So on April 23rd, Alfie was removed from life support, and he was sentenced to death by starvation. Tom and Kate sat by their by his bedside. He would gasp for air. He wasn't given water. Eventually, he was given some water. He'd be put on the ventilators. He was taken off, but he survived 5 days and passed away. So I think this is a really important question, not just for libertarians, but for everybody. Who makes the decision of what's best for what is the best course of action for a child? Okay. In this case, it's clear to everyone, with the exception of maybe the parents, but even the doctors that came from the Italian hospital said, you know, you realize there's no hope. We can make him comfortable, but he's going to spend his final years there. He's not going to recover. You know, they were saying the same thing as the UK. The UK just didn't want to pay for it because it's a nationalized healthcare system. And so care is rationed and they didn't want to spend any more money on him. Yeah. And so they were going to put him down like a dog. And but eventually he was going to pass away sooner rather than later. So because he kept having seizures, when he was touched, he would seize. So, I mean, this is a child who had a tremendous neurological condition that had already left him. You know, you've heard reports of a semi-vegetative state. He was in a semi-vegetative state when they brought him in a year before. Okay, he was in a vegetative state when he was taken off life support. So this is the doctors argued compassion, that the compassionate thing to do was to take him off ventilation, that he was brain dead, and to let him pass away. And the parents said, we're not ready to do that. We don't want to. We're going to go somewhere else. The courts ruled that the parents didn't have the right to make that decision, because the most compassionate thing to do was to remove him from life support. So now this is a decision that parents and family and children have to make about, you know, family members every day. You know, here in America, if you were in this situation, you might have some more options. Your insurance may stop paying for it, but you could pay for it. You could go to a different hospital if you're removed from that hospital. But in the United Kingdom, it's single payer healthcare, and so ultimately the state decides your care. And if the state decides they no longer want to pay for your care, your child's care, there is no, what makes no sense to me is why the United Kingdom, when they were granted Italian citizenship, the Pope had sent a helicopter to the landing pad at the hospital to transport the child. They said, we'll take care of all the medical bills. You're off the hook. This is what the parents wish. Why they wouldn't allow that? Because, and the dad even kind of argued, and this is a very crass argument, but the dad even kind of argued in court, like, not to sound like Hillary, but at this point, what difference does it make?
Yeah.
You know, like we know the reality. Now, they started to kind of put out into the public that he was getting better and started to kind of fan the flames. And that led to a ton of death threats at the hospital, which led local police authorities to start investigating people for mean tweets and harassment.
Mm-hmm.
And all that did was kind of harden the hospital's position towards the parents. And the parents ended up having to put out a statement saying, like, stop. Like, people were trying to storm it. So now Carly says they didn't euthanize him. They gave him end of life care. The parents should have been made. You'll have to say that again. Maybe you can read Carly's comment. She's actually in this industry.
Yeah, they gave him end of life care. Now the parents should have been able to make whatever choice that they wanted, but the child was given end of life care for a terminal condition.
Okay. Maybe I'm just ignorant, but to me, like, I don't know what the law is, but starving someone to death, like, that's really, like, maybe Carly can fill in on, like, what the procedure for a person getting, quote-unquote, end-of-life care is, but I don't know. This is all kind of, like, reminds me of the...
She's driving.
Yeah, reminds me of the Terry Schiavo case, which... You know, it was clear Terry Schiavo was brain dead. One side of the family wanted to end her life and take her off life support. The other side of the family didn't. And the courts ruled that they were going to remove life support. And I just remember thinking at the time, like, again, what difference does it make? So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe we can have Carly call in.
Yeah.
Get Carly's number if you can. I don't have Carly's phone number. We can call her. Maybe the connection won't be too rough.
We want me to ask her to put her phone number in the.
Just have her message it to you, and then you can write it down for me. Because if I'm not saying the right thing, I mean, in my mind, this kid seems like he was euthanized, to be quite honest, by the state. You know, there's the decision makers. We're not the parents. This is, I don't know, I hate this story because there are no easy answers.
Right.
And it's an incredibly emotional subject. Even when it's not your kid, it's not your country. But it is a scary proposition when you have a civilized Western country that doesn't understand self-ownership in any way, shape, or form. When you're a child, your parents... de facto own you, okay? Not as in slavery, but they are the guardians of your rights. They're there to protect you, to help you make the right decisions, to protect you from harm. But they also are the decision makers for what goes on. Now, there's limits. They can't hurt you. They can't beat you. They can't physically assault you. But they are the ultimate decision makers in your care. The United Kingdom is basically saying, no, we are. The courts are. And you see a lot of people arguing online that, yeah, the courts are rational and they are unbiased. They are the ones that should take care of your care. So, I mean, where do you weigh in on this? I mean, you're a parent of a child around the same age. How would you feel if you were in this situation?
I think I would have been the same thing, just as Alfie's parents. I wouldn't care. I'm sorry. As much time I can spend, with them, I probably would have done it. I wouldn't care. They could have shown me anything in the world, but the maximum time I could have spent, that's what I wanted to do. I own my child. Granted, I was, when Gunther was born, she was born super early, and, you know, we were given, you know, first, you know, because we're United States, the first world, the only first world country left. I was able to be able to get like that, like the first class clicker. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can hear her?
Sorry. I can hear her.
Oh, sorry. Carly, I didn't mean to bring you up right away. No. We'll have to call you back.
I can hear. Well, you can't hear
her? I can't hear her, no.
That's all that matters. I can hear.
Oh, I know. Here. Carly, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. So this is what you do for a living? Is that what
you're... I don't deal with children as a general rule. Usually just older adults. But still, when the body is shutting down, usually when they're putting in feeding tubes and keeping people on the ventilator and stuff like that, the feeding tube is keeping them alive, but it's still, you know, they're not going to wake up. This child was never going to wake up. This child was never going to have any kind of quality of life. He was considered in a terminal condition. We do this with adults all the time. And I think a lot of it comes from people are terrified of the word hospice. They are terrified of withdrawing care on their loved one because what if they make a mistake? What if there is a medical miracle? What if, you know, they do find something that can, you know, that can fix them and make them better? In general, that doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. And the doctors a lot of times know that everything, it doesn't matter what treatments they throw at somebody, this patient is never going to get better. And I commend the doctors, for one, for being that honest with that patient and that family, because you don't always see that. That is not always the case.
Really? Why is that?
No. As a general rule, doctors get attached to patients when they are asked to prognosticate a patient's condition and their expected length of life. They will overshoot that, usually by months or multiple times over. So when someone is coming in from the outside looking in, it's like, this patient is in stage of this. This patient is not going to live another 6 months. They are terminal. But that doctor is so emotionally attached to that patient because they may have been working with them for a long time. And it's hard to recognize that when you want this patient to do well, but they are just, they're not there anymore. Now, this is a little bit different because this patient was more of a vegetative state, brain dead. I don't know. I haven't read all the articles. I just looked at a little bit of it. But it's not starving. That's what scares people a lot, because they think that when they're going on hospice, they're starving, which is not true. As the body is shutting down, you naturally don't need those calories, so patients are not hungry. They're not hungry. They don't eat. You will see patients as they start declining and they start, you know, their bodies are starting to shut down and getting ready to pass. They don't want water. They don't want food because their bodies aren't processing it anymore. So they don't need it.
So do we have any clue what it is like for the person that's passing in that situation? I mean, is it painless? Is it just you go to...
It's totally painless.
Okay.
Yeah, it's totally painless. It does not hurt them.
And honestly, when you have 70% of your brain fiber eradicated, you're probably not feeling much, you know, not trying to be crass, but there isn't feeling necessarily.
No. Now, when people go on hospice, and just it's different with everybody's situation, because some patients are in a lot of pain. When people go on hospice or palliative care or more end-of-life type care, they are really, really focused on the symptoms. So if the patient is having, you know, major anxiety related to their breathing, they give them more medications to help with anxiety. If they are having a lot of pain, they are able to give a little bit more pain medicine because you stop being worried about, you know, giving them too much that it may make them too sleepy. Because if they're still seeking aggressive treatment, you can't be as aggressive. You know, you can't be as liberal with medicines like that because you're still worried about the patient having adverse effects. And when you're just seeking comfort to keep that patient comfort and to maximize the quality of life that they have while they have it left, you start looking at different things. So if you withdraw care on a patient and they decide they want ice cream, you give them ice cream. If they want water, you give them water. But if they don't want anything, you're not forcing them to eat.
Right.
So, because most of the time they don't want anything.
So what happens in America, and I don't know if you know this, but when a doctor and a family disagree on the course of a patient, what happens?
In general, whoever is in the family, and I may be wrong on this, and I am going to double check on this, but usually the court does not get involved sometimes I would think that the court does, like in the case of Terry Schiavo, if the family is not, if the family doesn't agree, or
I think
there's a whole lot of drama behind with all of that.
Yeah, that's partially why the Terry Schiavo case was so over the top in 2006, is that it was the courts deciding who, you know, that's why it was a big deal. It was a death panel, basically, in Sarah Palin's parlance. And people were arguing, is the court system the correct place to make this decision? And a lot of people didn't think that, even to the point that Congress passed a law. Tom DeLay rushed, the House Majority Leader at the time, passed a law saying the courts couldn't decide, or something along those lines, if my memory serves me correctly. So that doesn't surprise me that the courts aren't drawn into it. So, I mean, if a family doesn't agree with the doctor's course of action here in America, does the doctor just lose automatically?
You can't force someone to, you know, go on hospice. You can't force them to do that. I think and I'm going to double check on how often the court system actually gets involved. Where things get really hairy is if it is a patient that, you know, that doesn't have advance directives or a clear power of attorney, and you have weird family dynamics, you end up getting into a lot of problems there, especially if that patient hasn't made their wishes known and said, hey, this is who's making my decision. Because sometimes you get some muddy waters with, you have 93 family members and everyone's disagreeing and everyone's fighting in the hospital. And I would love to say that never happens, but it does.
Of course. Of course. So I think you said the key word. And do you have any questions for Carly? I mean, she answered a lot of the questions. Are there any in the chat room?
Sorry, I went looking for the that law for John DeLay.
Tom DeLay, yeah.
Just John DeLay.
Google Tom DeLay, Terry Schiavo. Yeah, I think you said that you hit on the key word, and that's force. And the reason that Alfie Evans stands out is, you know, I didn't spend a lot of time studying the end of life care, so I'm really glad that you called in, because that's not something that I've ever dealt with and I don't know a ton about. My issue with this is that a court system is forcing parents to do something that they don't want to do.
Yeah.
And
I don't agree with that at all.
And even if you were to cruelly say, we pay for the treatment, we're not paying for it, sorry, they could pay for it on their own. They did have alternative treatment. They did have an alternative treatment plan. So there really, to me, is just one answer, and that is the United Kingdom basically saying, no, we're in control of you, and doctors take precedent over whatever patients and parents want, and the United Kingdom healthcare system, it is doctors rule, and patients are second-class citizens when they go into the doctors. I mean, obviously, this is an extraordinary case, but what I always try to remind people is that the extraordinary cases, the ones where it's more clear cut. You know, when you look at this case, we all look at this and go, Alfie's not coming back. Okay. There is no quality of life here. Everyone in the entire situation agreed, with the exception of the two parents, that there wasn't going to be a future for Alfie Evans. But is he property of the state? Is he owned by the United Kingdom, or is he owned by himself and his parents in his stead? That's the fundamental question, and hopefully we would never get to that place in America, because America was founded on the idea that, as David French said in the National Review, we're founded on the idea that there is something greater than the force of law, that is God, that is natural rights, call it whatever you'd like, that our founding principles are beyond what the laws say. The laws are there to protect us from the government, to protect us from the government deciding that we are its property. The European countries don't have that. They came from a system where they were property of the state, and then they had to fight to carve out things like the Magna Carta, the Castle Doctrine, and other other situations. So, but you know, when you have the United Kingdom, which where we sprang from, which is a civilized Western country that makes the decision that their citizens are property, that is a scary proposition, because when you start with a Charlie Gard, when you start with an Alfie Evans, everybody kind of goes, yeah, I mean, this kid, I hate that this happened for the parents, but this kid is, it's like, it is kind of cruel. I could see how the courts can make that decision. The courts are non-biased, so they, of course they could make that decision. But when you look at the eugenics programs of the early 1900s, when you look at Action T4 in Nazi Germany, it always starts with the Alfie Evans.
Right.
It always starts with the erosion of the respect of life, and that the state is the ultimate arbiter of who lives and who dies because you are their property. That, to me, is what stands out about this case. The fact that Alfie, unfortunately, you know, as Carly basically has put it, had no quality of life. But he still was an individual, and his parents were the guardians of that individual, and he has rights, and that includes a right to life. Now, Carly, is it fair to say that people live longer because of modern medicine? You know, nature clearly, you're returning Alfie to a state of nature when you're removing him from the ventilation. But who makes that determination is really kind of the difficult part. I don't know exactly how to phrase my question without sounding
cold,
Chris. But the fact is Alfie was only alive because of medical intervention. His body clearly had clearly shut down, and he was going to pass no matter what.
Correct.
So, likely
without them intervening when they did, he probably would have died a long time ago.
Right. So, anything else you'd like to interject?
No, I don't think so. Not right now. I might think of something later.
All right. Yeah, text us in the chat. Well, thank you for adding this perspective.
Well, thank you for allowing me to.
Yep. I try to be an expert, but one person cannot be an expert in the complexities of humanity, so I appreciate when our listeners write in after the fact to editor@wearelibertarians.com and provide a different perspective, or, you know, in this case, Carly's a Patreon subscriber, so she was watching the live feed and able to chime in. I don't know. We interrupted you talking about how what you would do in this particular situation if you were the father.
I worked in nursing home and hospice care inside of dietary, so I've seen some of that. I didn't know all the technical stuff that happened behind it, but you know, I understand everything that Carly has said. And everything the doctors have said. But if I also feel like being forced to do any of that, or just be able to have, you know, just be able to feel the warmth of my daughter for one extra day, I'd take every day I can get.
Yeah.
I wouldn't care if it's a vegetable. But that's, and I'll admit, that's a very emotional response. And I don't care.
Sure.
It's my daughter, you know.
And ultimately, it is your right to make that decision.
Right. The other thing that gets me was that people are shocked that this was happening inside the United Kingdom. It's like, what do you think all these memes about if it pleases the crown came from? Where
right.
do you think these ideas came from or fought against?
Yeah.
It's more of just pulling the, it just pulls back the curtain of the idea that no, there is, you know, they do not, they have like an illusion. That's the biggest illusion of freedom. Granted, yeah, there's some illusion of freedom in the United States, but no, don't kid yourself, you know. England, a lot of different old countries out in Europe, those are illusions of freedom.
Well, they've had to, they haven't even fought. I mean, they didn't fight the revolution. I mean, they are in a much, legally in a much different place than we are.
Yeah.
And people feel that America is losing its freedom, and in a lot of ways we are, and we have to fight for freedom. I mean, the entire idea of watering the tree of liberty with the blood of patriots is not a violent metaphor, essentially. It is that every generation has to have a We Are Libertarians,
mm-hmm.
and every generation has to have a Murray Rothbard. Every generation has to have a von Mises, people who shout, this is what liberty looks like.
Right.
You know, every generation has to reteach the idea of libertarianism and liberty,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the ideas of the founders are so lost at this point that they're radical libertarians in this modern day and age. But we were really founded on libertarian principles. I mean, yeah, there was that slavery thing, Harry, but yeah. Other than that,
yeah, but you know, that's the, that, but coming from what they had, that was, those are huge steps for me from what they had.
Right.
Coming with the, I don't really leave Alfie too much, but the radical thought that you own yourself, that's a massive radical thought back then.
Right.
You know, no, I choose my own stake in life. The crown does not. You know,
right.
I choose this own. That's radical in, radical in itself, right? And even some of them even then, played around the idea, understanding of moving away from slavery.
Right.
And they had these radical ideas.
We watch all these TV shows like Versailles or Game of Thrones or some of these period pieces. You know, Game of Thrones isn't historically accurate, but it does show you, I think, in pretty decent detail what it was like to live in the Middle Ages. And if you lived under Cersei Lannister, you were her property. And that is the entirety of the way that modern humans developed. Let's say pretty much from the Sumerians in the 7000 BC era, mm-hmm. all the way up until, the 1700s. People were property of the state. They were property of a monarch. They were property of a dictator. And we somehow think that because we vote in people, that same mindset doesn't still exist. You know, because people in Britain get to vote, they somehow think that they are free. Well, or that they aren't property of the state. And it's incidents like this, and to a lesser extent, where the guy in England flipped off the camera.
Right.
He flipped off the traffic camera, and they arrested him for it,
mm-hmm.
for vulgarity towards the state or whatever their law is.
Count Dankula,
who made a joke on a comedy YouTube channel, mm-hmm. and gets arrested for speech. These are incidences of the state reminding its citizens that we are in charge. And just because...
The knife thing, going after knives. And you can go back. I remember I was watching an old episode of Top Gear, and they were joking about walking around a machete to defend themselves against terrorists.
Right.
And it's like, wow, this is an old joke. Whoa, and machete underneath this car seat.
Yeah.
Man, couldn't get away with that now. You know, it's all these interestings in the UK that is just like, come on, people. Do you see this stuff? This has been going on for a long time. They still have TV licenses. People
right.
still paid their TV license. They go and rape people. They put cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay? They don't care about your privacy. They watch all these cameras. They have cops that go into bars to go, break up bar fights or just mess with people. You touch a cop, it's instant jail time. Instant. It's no court. You touched a Bobby. Going to jail.
These are... the next generation, I think, of Americans... As you talk to kids who are under the age of 30, are European socialists in a lot of ways. And so we do have a strain of freedom, but it can easily be extinguished. And you look at the love and support of Bernie, the people who grew up under the Barack Obama presidency, the reaction to Donald Trump, and the solutions to Donald Trump that some people come up with. Like you go... this is not what I'm looking for. You know, Bernie Sanders with his tax plan where he's going to give every single person a job. He's going to divide us into districts, just like they did in the USSR and China.
scary.
And the works projects. I mean, it's Bernie Sanders is a European socialist, basically. Like mm-hmm. that. Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, this is the kind of future that they want. They want the American idea to be transformed into the state owns you. And yes, you're going to get free health care, but we own you.
Yeah, but at what cost?
At what cost? And that's why Obamacare was such a big deal. You, to be a legal citizen in the United States of America, had to buy a product. For the first time ever, you had to buy something to be a legal citizen. Mm-hmm. Now, you have to get a driver's license, for instance, okay? But that's state by state. So a state could repeal the licensing of your car and your driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's possible. It's also, you don't have to drive.
Right.
You don't have to get a license to be a legal citizen.
Correct.
Okay. You don't have to have identity and papers. You're just a free human being. Okay. But now you have to have insurance or they're going to fine you. Don't pay that fine. What's going to happen, Harry?
They'll send men with guns to your house to come after you and your family.
Right. So buy that product. And by the way, we're going to dictate how that product is designed and how it functions. And oh, look, it doesn't.
Right. It doesn't. It costs more. More people can't get on it. It's ridiculous.
Right.
It was like the first thing that really made me go get employee paid for healthcare. But for the longest time, I just had the regular healthcare plan that I had when I was 18. I kept paying that sucker. You know, right. It was just catastrophic because, you know, it was, you know, I mean, you know, just a young male.
You're young
healthy? Yeah, I'm not going to go. I don't go to the doctor. You know, something happens. I'll fix it myself using WebMD. Okay. I fought an Ebola twice, but I'm
duct
good.
Duct tape and super glue.
And Robitussin. You pour a little Robitussin in the broken wound.
It.
Yeah, you just put some Tussin in the broken wound.
Tussin it. I didn't have health insurance my entire 20s. I had health insurance 1 year out of my entire 20s.
I did cool things like mountain climb and rode motorcycles.
So. Okay, I didn't. I sat on my ass and read books and told libertarians what to do. That's kind of cool. Yeah, I mean, so we have to be really careful to remember this because once the state has decided that you are its property, then it's pretty hard to carve that back out without bloodshed. So... there's been a strain of this argument saying, like, this is why the Second Amendment exists. And I've seen the reaction to that. A former congressman tweeted that out, basically saying, you know, this is why the Second, and I said something very similar on my Twitter, you know, that the Second Amendment exists to protect us from a government that thinks that it owns you. It's to protect your right to life, liberty, and property.
Yep.
And... The point of the Second Amendment is not just to protect your person and to protect your community.
Mm-hmm.
It's also to protect you from the government. And that is the main reason that the Second Amendment exists. It is, it says well-regulated militias because the common defense was basically, you know, men of the community, like sort of like volunteer fire departments
mm-hmm.
in the rural areas of our country. And some
larger cities.
Right. And, you know, you didn't need police forces because you had every person had a weapon because they had to hunt for their food or they, you know, you lived in a rural society, even if you were in John Adams, Boston and Cambridge.
And Indiana still sprouts a very large volunteer police force.
Right. We do?
Yeah. Indiana has a very large volunteer police force.
Well, that's weird.
How's it weird?
I don't know. I just wouldn't have guessed it.
Why do you think Indiana police is different from all those other cops? Where you get like that one, you know, Westman was like, wow, I've really got a nice cop today. I was like, well, probably ain't getting paid. You know, he's one of you. He's got a full-time job. Yeah. He can understand the issues that you're going through.
Flint, if you haven't watched Flint Town on Netflix, they employ volunteer cops to do some of the low-level take reports type stuff. So the police, the 100 police in their department, when they have 9 cops on at any given moment, they're not filling out reports. A volunteer is. And people are happy to volunteer because they live in Flint, Michigan, and they want it to be better. People are more than willing to volunteer to protect their community.
Well, I would only wish Indianapolis to get the stolen car task force back on the police force because right now it's very, very scary. If your car gets stolen, IMPD don't care. So don't get your car stolen in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I don't plan on it.
Make sure you be in Greenwood or Lawrence or somewhere where they care.
So let's define what a tyrannical government is.
A government that can do anything for you can do anything to you.
I would say a tyrannical government is the type of government that, even using its laws, decides that it owns your child and you don't.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
No.
I want to hear what you were going to say before I said what I said and people think I'm crazy.
And if you don't think the United States has got some of those teeth the same way, if you have a child, try to take them out of public schools.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Compulsory.
I wanna.
Right.
Utah had to write a law to let them do free range kids.
Right.
So if you don't think the United States government hasn't, you know, just thought about this idea or tried to put that you know, camel's nose underneath the tent on that whole idea. They have.
I mean, you think about the CPS, the story that we did years ago, 2015, 2016, with Joe Ruiz, where he and I talked about the parents that their kids walked to the playground and CPS scooped them up and locked them up and said, you can't have your kids back because you let them walk to the park. Yeah. And they didn't have their kids for 2 days.
Yeah, scary.
So,
scary thought, because I remember like being up in New Hampshire and I could hitchhike to another town just to get ice cream.
Right. Mittens, you're really getting on my nerves. Come on, get out of here. She's just out of control lately.
It's in the new chairs.
It must be. Harry, you're sharing your chair with Mittens, by the way.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, and that's why there was a towel here when you got here. You also got the floor model, so it's used. Come here. Get out of Harry's face. So you're sharing that with the butts of many different people. Harry and Mittens are snuggling. All right, so final thoughts on the Alfie Evans case.
There was several, like, if you really look at it, it's such an emotional tearjerker, and it just goes to, how can I put this? If you do talk about someone with this, and just remember everyone's, like, you know, everyone who did this thing was human, and they were all making the best decision at the time of information that was given to them. But there's only two people in that whole thing that were completely personally involved that they really should have the most, but their care was ignored.
There's only two people that are going to go to the grave 5 years from now, and it's the parents.
Yeah. And the other thing is with like the idea that, it's kind of like Carly's not wrong, but it did kind of like hurt a little bit because the idea is like if they'd medically intervened with modern medicine, they would have been dead a long time ago. The child would have been dead earlier. It's the same thing. I don't think I ever thought of you was like, you know, when Gunther was coming out, I could have lost Gunther and my wife at the same time.
Sure.
But modern medicine made it so that, you know, the newborn was viable at, 30 weeks. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and that's why modern medicine is a miracle. That's why it is great. And it extends people's lives and it gives life to people who, 100 years ago wouldn't have had life. So it is a miraculous thing. And I think the idea of medical ethics is really something that I need to read up on, because I think we're going to see more and more of that, especially as boomers start to get into the final stretch. And there's so many of them.
Now the death panel starts. Oh,
I'm not going to make a joke because I'm being serious, but because it is a very serious thing. And I think we're moving into a society that is so much more litigious and is so much more desperate for the government to make decisions for us, that we've got to be rock solid on who owns our bodies. Who determines our rights? Who determines our future? It is us. It is self-government. It is self-ownership. You determine your future. You are the holder of your rights. And let the Alfie Evans case be a learning lesson that governments, no matter how liberal, no matter how Western, no matter how free we think they are, they still, at the end of the day, when unchecked, consider you their property. Even though the government is made up of people democratically elected, people that we know, that we have talked to, when humans get in groups of people and give themselves power, they turn into tyrants. I mean, that's just how it is. So, but I do think Harry's also right. On the other hand, everybody in this case, I think, thought that they were doing what was best. Okay, they don't have an understanding of where rights come from, but they were trying to do what was best for the child, in their opinion. All the judges said it. You know, it goes without saying the judge, Lord Alfred somebody, he went and actually saw Alfie. He actually, before he ruled, went and spent time with Alfie. You know, like, if he were just some guy who didn't care,
yeah,
you know, it's not a publicity stunt for him, because it's not how that works. You know, he's not getting elected in England. He's trying to make the best decision for the child. He just he's just wrong about where rights come from and who is the who carries the best interest of that child. It is the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy for us to get lost in all the details and the complexity. And like, this is a situation where the complexity can overwhelm the simplicity of it. And the simple answer is the parents, the parents, the parents, the parents. You have to keep going back to that. You know, to remove the care of this child from the parents based on a law that says that they were abusing Alfie is mind-numbingly stupid.
Right.
You know, these parents were not abusing their child. They went above and beyond. They moved another nation to grant citizenship. He got an audience with the Pope. Like,
yeah.
they raised probably, they could have raised millions of dollars, like Charlie Gard's family, if they needed to. Like, these two parents are not bad parents. They are doing everything they can because they love this kid. They're not trying to abuse their child. So, you know, so I don't know. It's just it's a crummy case. So let's talk about something happy. Any final thoughts on that before we move on?
No, other than it's called the compromise bill, the Terry Schiavo.
Oh, bill the compromise Florida. Bill.
It's called the compromise.
Okay. Good news. Sorry. Let's not start with the Iran stuff.
I thought you wanted to go good news.
Yeah.
You know what, Korea? You said good news.
I'm getting to it.
You said good news,
Korea. And I say Korea intentionally. Not North Korea, not South Korea. Korea met. This story makes me really happy. I spent a lot of 2017 studying North Korea and reading books like Barbara Emmerich's. I wish I had. I have it somewhere.
You want me to search for
it? Yeah, Barbara Emmerich's book on North Korea. It's so good. Such a great book. You've got to read it. It's a fantastic book. But North Korea is an isolationist state. So you'll hear libertarians.
Nothing to envy. Nothing, ordinary lives in North Korea.
Ordinary lives. And it basically tells you the history of North Korea through the eyes of ordinary people. And it's traumatic. And this book is... It makes you feel every emotion. It is amazing, and it just, like, reading it sent me off on a massive amount of reading and documentary viewing about the North Korean people, and I love them. Like, they seem like nice, lovely people, and it's a shame what their government is doing to them. And, you know, Kim Jong-un is a dictator, and so we have to keep this into perspective. Kim Jong-un is a person that has, you know, like
food,
double digit percentages of his population in prison camps. He has murdered his own uncle. He's murdered his brother to maintain power. Like, this is a guy who's 34 years old, who's in power. He's been in power about 6 years now. And he's a very wily person. And he has used, starting with the Olympics, you know, he had a very spastic year where he was testing ICBMs, basically missiles that will reach the United States. They had their most powerful nuclear detonation in 2017, and Donald Trump basically said, "I'm not going to stand for this." There was a clip of him in 1999, I heard, where he was like, "No, I'm going to denuclearize them if forced by necessary." So Donald Trump has been, and it's funny when you hear that clip. I'll see if I can find it. When you hear that clip of Donald Trump talking in 1999 about North Korea, you hear the erosion of his ability to speak. Like, and his thought process and how simplistic it is now. He basically told people, according to Lindsey Graham, take this for what it's worth, that when he became president, he was going to do whatever it took to keep North Korea from getting nuclear weapons. So he's been very tough in his language on them. And that, according to South Korea, has been a big factor in why North Korea has come to the table. So, that's a tough question for non-interventionists, Harry. If you're going to saber rattle as a strategy to bring your enemy to the table, is that permissible? That's a tough quandary, isn't it?
That's a good one. Considering, right? That's also the safeguard against a tyrant in liberty anyways. We'll saber rattle with the Second Amendment, if need be, to ensure liberty.
Right.
So, in a way, it's almost the exact same strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot greater. No, it's about this. Depending on the person, it's the same scale.
Right.
So, it's the same thing. It's just like, no, I've got this. This is what I have. If need be, we'll do this. One, when you come down to it, any person nuclear weapons is a threat against everybody. It's not against one person. You're a global threat.
Right.
Having nuclear weapons is just a threat, period.
Right.
That's why the whole argument of Second Amendment and nukes is stupid. It's like, no, you're a threat to everybody.
Yeah. Because, North Korea, and we'll get to it, it's like Fukushima. Let's say this. Let's not spoil the surprise. Fukushima in Japan, when they had the tsunami, Fukushima started leaking massive amounts of nuclear waste into the ocean.
just the ocean.
Nuclear power to me, love the idea, but man, it's so risky. It's
beautiful and safe, and a lot of the radiation and what you think has been going on because of Fukushima, yes, there's been stuff going on, but it's not as bad as everyone puts it out to be. Mm. No radiation from Fukushima is not hitting California. No, it is not affecting any of the wildlife that you eat, because if it does, it affects something's bones and doesn't get processed to you unless you eat bone.
Right.
So you're fine.
I know. Never mind. I was going to make a crude joke.
Oh,
it's going down vulgar road about eating bones.
If there's other things in the water to worry about, there's the bloop sound in the trench and the gigantic Pacific plastic problem. There's other things in the Pacific that you should be worried about.
Yeah.
And Filipinos, coming over here with their music and their good food.
What did the Filipinos ever do to you?
Coming over with their food and making me fat. No.
I've never had Filipino food. Do they have food?
Stay away from it, man. It makes so good.
All right. So let's hear what Donald Trump, and I want you, as you listen to this clip, listen to the difference in his speech patterns in 1999, which 19 years ago versus now. You clearly hear he's an intelligent man. And now it's like, it's hard to claim he's intelligent, even though James Comey said, Donald Trump is not losing his mind. He's not a crazy person. He's a person of above average intelligence. Now, why is Dakota? This show has been a shit show. This has been one of our more disorganized, choppy We Are Libertarians episodes. Dakota Davis, of all people, is messaging us. He should know better as the boss, as the deputy boss hog of liberty. So listen to Donald Trump in this clip.
As far as nuclear is concerned, this country, us, we need a shield because Russia's unstable. North Korea's unstable. We need a missile defense shield. And if we don't have one, and if we don't start developing, and now, people used to criticize Reagan. The fact is now it's very developable. And we need a shield.
If you want to build this strategic defense shield to prevent against missiles, you have to go ahead and negotiate with the Russians a change in the 1972 ABM, the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty. What if the Russians say no, no can do?
Well, look, you just said it, a change in 1972. A treaty that was made in 1972, who knew what was going to happen in terms of technology? It's time for a change, and we have to sit down with the Russians and many others. Look at North Korea. North Korea is developing missiles like nobody has ever seen. And we better do something rather quickly with them, hopefully through negotiation. But we better do something rather quickly with them. Russia.
What if, on the North Korean front, what if the North Koreans don't play ball, develop a nuclear capability, go forward with their missile development? Does the United States act unilaterally?
Excuse me. If spoken to correctly, they will play ball. Look on another front what happened recently where Clinton has asked our so-called trade partners to come so we can renegotiate some fairness into trade, right? They don't show up. They say we're not coming. Why would Germany show up? Why would France show up? Why would Japan show up? They've been ripping this off for years, so why would they come here? It's ridiculous. So it shows a lack of respect for the United States where he asks for a meeting, a summit, and nobody shows. Pretty sad, Wolf.
But is there something the United States should be thinking about doing as far as North Korea's potential nuclear development?
Absolutely. They should be thinking about it. And frankly,
give me an example.
I'll say this. You go in, you start negotiating. And if you don't stop them from doing it, you will have to take rather drastic actions. Because if you don't take them now, you're going to be in awfully big trouble in 5 years from now when they have more missiles than we do. We're a bunch of saps. There's no question that North Korea is developing missiles. We give them nuclear power plants. We give them tremendous aid because we thought we could bribe them into stop development. Well, they're developing. So much so that South Korea is now developing their own missile systems in order to protect. And I'm really not sure I can blame them. But North Korea is totally out of control. And would you rather have a very, very serious chat with them now? And if necessary, you might have to do something fairly drastic. Or would you rather have to go after them in 5 years when they have more nuclear warheads and missiles than we do?
When you say something fairly drastic, that sounds like you're suggesting a potential Israeli-like unilateral strike against the Osirak reactor in Iraq in the 80s.
You can never rule it out. What Israel did was fantastic, and you can never rule it out. And you know what? If you ruled it out, you couldn't talk to them. Why would they? The only thing they're afraid of is exactly what you just said. That's what they're afraid of. That's what they're concerned with. You'll most likely, with that attitude, be able to make a deal. But if you can't, you have to react. And let me tell you something. Don't react in 5 years, because if you react in 5 years, nothing's going to be left. You don't have to worry about your Social Security system anymore.
All right. So now that's 20 years ago. Now there's some problems with that. First off, they never had as many missiles as the United States. Like, nobody has as many intercontinental ballistic missiles as the U.S. Like, Russia's probably close.
That work.
China is developing them. But, yeah, like, the military is not even close. And 5 years down the line, George Bush was sitting at the table negotiating with them, and they had weakened abilities to develop missiles and nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. And now we're looking here 20 years later. It took them 20 years from his prediction of five to get ICBMs and nuclear weapons. Now, here's the thing about their program. They have nuclear weapons, okay? They have the ability to make the nuclear warhead that goes on top of a missile. An ICBM is a missile that could hit the United States. So you have to do two things, and this comes into the Iran deal as well. So North Korea has one site where they make the nuclear fissile material. And that just collapsed in on itself. Let's take a jaunt through our many news stories here.
Mm-hmm.
But they're they in this mountain where they refine the uranium. Essentially, they had some problems, Harry.
Yes, it's freaking dangerous.
Yeah, it's very dangerous to do. And North Korea this month announced that it had suspended all tests of nuclear devices and intercontinental missiles and plans to close its nuclear testing ground. The statement came after two separate groups of Chinese scientists confirmed last week that North Korea's mountain nuclear test site had collapsed, putting China and other nearby nations at risk of radioactive exposure. The disintegration following five nuclear blasts may be why Kim declared on Friday that he would freeze the Hermit State's nuclear and missile tests and shut down the site.
Mm-hmm.
One researcher said, the mountain's collapse and the prospect of radioactive exposure in the aftermath confirm a series of exclusive reports by the South China Morning Post on China's fears that Pyongyang's latest nuclear test caused a fallout leak. In the conversation with Moon, the South Korean president, Kim denied that he would be merely clearing out damaged goods, saying that the site also has two new tunnels that are larger than previous testing facilities, Yoon said. So
a Chernobyl-like event, but instead of being a power reactor, they were making weapons.
Right.
And you just got your putty everywhere.
I just got my putty all over my prep. Dang it. Yeah.
Yeah, but unlike Chernobyl, what it was just a little itty-bitty power reactor. Yeah, little itty-bitty power reactor. This was doing weapons, and they had a little mistake.
Right.
That's why when you, it just, the difference of safeguards that went into it when the United States developed their nuclear program. Yes, they were in a hurry, but they also did it in the middle of no. They also had the ability of having so much nothingness to try it out in, and also majority science and safe precautions. They were doing it and doing it safe, and no one else has done it before them, so they were being extra cautious and didn't really know. I don't really think the United States nuclear program would have went as fast as it did if they would have known all the risks.
Right.
You know, and knew the explosion that could have happened in their face.
Like killing John Wayne.
Because
they filmed all these Westerns after the blasts, and John Wayne and a lot of the people who worked on those Westerns ended up getting cancer. Because of shooting. And I'm going to Vegas next weekend for my brother's wedding.
First off.
And people are like, hey, you want to go see the nuclear testing? I was like, no.
You'll be fine. No. It is less background radiation there than is the whole flight out there. If you don't believe me, bring a background radiation monitor with you. Go to the bathroom, turn it on, watch it jump up, and then you hit there on the ground. And you barely see anything. It's all background radiation. You'll be fine.
Okay.
All right, that's not how radiation works. Talk to Reinhold. Talk to Reinhold. I'll teach you about
something. I don't want
to
do that.
He'll just tuck your ear off the radiation.
Then I have to talk to Reinhold. Yeah. Listen, you've convinced me maybe I'll do it. But
do it. It's fun. Just don't, how can I put it? When you get done, take a shower, get that dust off you. You don't want any of that dust staying off you too long, especially your genitals.
So you just said it was safe.
It is safe. It's about prolonged exposure to the background radiation.
Okay. So North Korea has nuclear weapons. Okay, they have anywhere from 20 to 60 by some estimates, and they now have the capability to shoot interballistic missiles. And they just lost their testing facility.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Kim Jong Un, and you just had a great, you almost had the moral equivalency of yourself with all of your competitors, even though you run a police state, and you murder people at your will, and you basically are a total dictator that starves your own people.
They don't even have food to give to people.
Exactly right. Now you're sitting here with the following calculations. Okay, you know that you need nuclear weapons because you have to survive because you have an aggressive president where Donald Trump saying those things in 1999, I guarantee he's saying the exact same things behind closed doors. I'm taking nothing off the table. I'm going to prevent you from furthering your program, and I will use military force if I have to. I will do whatever it takes. All right. Well, that's one factor. All right. I have lost my only testing facility, I can claim that I've shut it down out of goodwill. If I talk to the South Koreans, there's a new South Korean president who is of the very liberal wing of, and the most hilarious thing of all my prep was listening to Ben Shapiro poo-poo the idea of talking to North Korea because the South Korean president is a liberal. I'm just going to go out on a limb and guess that, their liberal's probably different than our liberal. I don't know. But we can't talk to them because our allies are liberal. Ugh. But
wait 4 years.
So this is a new president, and the president has like some crazy high approval rating, like 70-80% approval rating. After the Olympics and after the coup of getting North Korea to do a combined Olympics, and his sister came down, and they have elections coming up in July, I believe. And so he really is interested in riding this crest, and he's very early in his term. Past deals with past South Korean presidents came at the end of that person's term, when obviously it's like a lame duck president here. You're ready for Obama and Bush and Clinton and these people to leave. And it's the same in South Korea. So you've got somebody who's brand new, and you have 4 years to work with them.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a long relationship that you can work out the process of denuclearization, reunification, and peace in general. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to also say, and possibly he can probably work out a way where things become more peaceful and his head doesn't go on a block.
Right.
Or go into jail.
Right. Because he's seen that when you lose your weapons of mass destruction, like Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi and what's the guy in Egypt that lost his head, Mubarak, in the Arab Spring, he sees the consequences of losing your weapons of mass destruction. Now, so he's...
he could be playing us. Okay, he could be saying, all right, I've already got the technology to do the ICBMs. I've got the ability to make the nuclear weapons. I know how to do it. I've got the information. We figured it out. But I need time because I need to rebuild what just was lost, right. And I need money to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the best way to give myself time and money? Strike a deal with the Americans like my father and grandfather did. Strike a deal that will denuclearize the peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that I'm doing all of these things, and then I will never do it, and I will get a boatload of cash, and I might get some of the UN sanctions that are crippling our economy lifted, and then I can work in secret to rebuild my nuclear capability. Now, this is what Iran is basically doing as well. We just gave this deal to Iran.
Right.
Okay, we're 8 years from an... Like this, the Iran nuclear deal basically said, all right, we're not going to talk about the delivery system. We're not going to talk about the ICBMs. We're only going to deal with your ability to create the warhead, the fissile material. And we're going to shut down your labs, and you're not allowed to do these things. Okay, so they shut down their centrifuges. And in return, we gave them pallets of billions of dollars of cash. Why cash? Why not wire the money, Harry? Because cash is untraceable.
Yes.
So all those billions of dollars on pallets that we delivered to the Iranians as a reparation, basically, for overthrowing their government for so many years and for imposing sanctions on them, that cash was all then flooded to Assad. And it was flooded to Hezbollah in Jordan and Lebanon. And it is part of the reason that we are more engrossed in Syria than ever before, because we basically gave money to people we're fighting.
Mm-hmm. Perfect plan.
And 10 years down the road, centrifuges are going to be cheaper. But you just say, we don't know how to do those weapons yet, so we'll stop development. What happened yesterday? One of the craziest press conferences I've ever seen. Bibi Netanyahu, if you haven't watched it, you got to watch it. Just for the visual of it. The Mossad, which is their CIA in Israel, went to this little storage unit in Tehran and stole like 20 tons of documents and CDs, and basically proved that they had the ability to create nuclear weapons in the late 90s. And they stopped building those programs in the late 90s, but they do have the ability to do it. So Netanyahu's argument was a little thin. It was very thin, and it was all based around stuff that they stopped doing in the early 2000s, like early George Bush era. And the reason Netanyahu did it is that Trump has to sign a document on May 12th stating that the Iranians are or are not abiding by this nuclear agreement. And if he does sign it, then it's probably strategically the right thing for him to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you were to pull out of the Iranian deal, like you'd need to, like we don't have an ambassador for South Korea. Like we don't have most of the ambassadorships filled. We don't have deputy secretaries of state. like we don't have any of this stuff filled out because the Trump administration and the Senate, which is controlled by Republicans, can't get a lot of people confirmed. So you don't even have the diplomatic infrastructure to deal with the fallout of not signing the agreement and, mm-hmm. and canceling that deal. But probably more important to Trump's thinking is that May 14th, 2 days later, is when the Israeli embassy opens. And this is a big win that you're going to use to fundraise, and it's a feather in your cap because no other president did it. Jared Kushner's going. He's going to give a speech. There's been some rumors that Pence and Trump himself may go to the opening. If you don't sign the Iran deal, you completely overshadow it. You have the opportunity to not sign this agreement 6 months later. So he'll probably sign this agreement, but they are kind of signaling. John Bolton, Mike Pompeo, Donald Trump himself all had talked with Bibi Netanyahu about this presentation a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So this may be a coordinated thing where Netanyahu is giving Trump cover to leave the nuclear deal. So that's what's going on with Iran, basically. And so you have these two countries which are hostile to the United States, which are developing nuclear weapons, which are right on the brink, if not there. They just don't have the ability to deliver it to the United States. North Korea has a greater ability than Iran. Iran has the ability to blow up Israel and Saudi Arabia and all the American troops that we seem to have stationed in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. Which are really just keeping Israel at bay.
Exactly. Right. So he may be stalling for time, trying to get the same deal that the Iranians got. And he may be doing what North Korea has always done, which is lie and get sanctions lifted and then move on their merry way. But here's some other considerations to take into account. There's a large growing middle class in North Korea,
mm-hmm.
and they're young and they're professionals, people like Harry and I.
Mm-hmm.
If we were in North Korea, there's a growing sentiment amongst that middle class. There's also an opening of the economy under Kim Jong Il, but accelerating under Un. They have these open air markets. Mm-hmm. Now, you were not allowed to do, like, you always had black markets.
Yes.
But starting during the famines in the 90s, officials started to look the other way, and the central government never cracked down on these markets where people would sell, you know, shoes that they made or clothing or basic goods or food that they had secretly grown, or kimchi. And these have grown into more robust markets. And Kim Jong-un even tours some of these on state TV. So there is an opening. I tried to find it in that Barbara Emmerich book, but there was also a defector who had been very close to Kim Jong-un who said at one point that he wanted to open China the same way that he wanted to open North Korea the same way that China had been opened.
Right.
You know, he wants to be a liberalizer. He wants to open up North Korea and make it a state that interacts with the world, basically. Mm-hmm. So he has financial pressures that are growing inside of the state. He understands that the grip of totalitarianism in the internet age especially is growing more and more difficult. And he understands that if he were to open up his economy, they would become much more prosperous. So the difference between those past times when they've sat down at the table, Un has already said, we'll talk denuclearization and we're going to take off the withdrawal of American troops from South Korea off the table. Now, in the past, they have said, we're not going to negotiate until the United States leaves the peninsula, to which Washington said, fat chance, we need this strategic position to fight China if we need to.
You mean protect South Korea?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I slip and say the truth? Yeah, sorry. Yeah, we need you to withdraw from Japan and South Korea. Have you read about the Thucydides trap? There's a great book called Destined for War by Graham Allison that you should look up. So that he has taken that off of the table. He's done a lot of different things that are really are more notable, including walking into South Korea. So which was a very big deal that he said he's also prepared to talk to Japan anytime. He wants frequent meetings. He said at one point, once we started talking, the United States will know that I'm not a person to launch nuclear weapons at South Korea, the Pacific, or the United States. So he's trying. It sounds like he's saying all the right things.
And I think, all speculation, of course, because I haven't talked to Dennis Rodman in a while, but that talking with South Korea and China, that Kim Jong may have found a way to, so he doesn't, like I said, doesn't end up in a box.
Right.
And the only way to do it is to open yourself up just like China did. Because a lot of the heads in the Chinese government, their heads did not roll, and they opened themselves up with special economic zones.
Right.
And use that to fund whatever weird thing they're doing in China, but it also, like, took the fangs out of the red China.
Right.
And doing that is in North Korea, one, will make sure he doesn't end up in a box, his people get fed, and everyone else, you know, it helps out his country.
Mm-hmm.
Putting a special economic zone right there on the edge of South Korea,
mm-hmm.
Right there. So it's right there in the north. So now South Korea has a spot to basically has their China. They can go somewhere to ship and get cheap labor and cheap goods from.
Right. Which this is already happening. This is part of a previous deal that was struck in 2007. there are little zones along the DMZ where South Korean companies go and, you know, they basically hire cheap labor to compete with Chinese labor. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what they'd like to do more of.
Right.
North Korea and South Korea.
And when you also bring in Western capital in that type of style, you also have the ability to also bring in food because they do have shipping ports.
Right.
And that also bring in one fish and one just fishing style, because a lot of the problems is North Korea, they just don't have people who are trained fishermen anymore.
Right.
They're running low on them. A lot of those were old men and they're dead now.
Yeah.
So bringing in skill, I mean, because people will, one, take the young guys or young trained professionals and or people who would, don't aren't trained in other skills, but, you know, they've got good backs and hands. They can train to be fishermen. It's all this other, like, and it allows them to basically keep living.
Mm-hmm.
And once it's open up, it's because of the internet and the, well, just the way communications is now in 2018, it won't allow them to be locked up the way they are anymore.
Right.
You can't do that anymore.
Right.
And if they don't, they'll crumble a different way.
Right.
So these are very strategic, smart moves to help kick the can down the road.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
And, like, once the generals start bringing in money and start getting actually paid and have food, they're not really going to want to start that nuclear program back up.
Yeah, exactly right. Because then why risk what economic benefits you brought in?
Right. Yeah, just like the whole Chinese, like, war with China, like that. Whoa. Did you see my Bentley?
Well, when China opened up, they had nuclear weapons and nobody cared. And when Carter, you know, Nixon opened China, but then Carter signed a deal with them that allowed us to trade with China.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nobody even talked about the fact that they had nuclear weapons because they wanted access to that market of cheap labor.
That's right. And then the Chinese officials, you know, we're communists, but ooh, look at this money coming in.
They've managed to blend, you know, the same system that that North Korea has with South Korean capitalism. So, mm-hmm. So this is from a Strat4 Global Intelligence document. Talking about some of the history of why they think the way that they do. You know, North Korea has always had one goal, and that's the reunification of the Korean Peninsula, because Korea has always been vulnerable as a pathway of invasion. And so they know that if it's a divided Korea, they could be a pathway of invasion again. Part of North Korea's thinking is shaped by war and also very outdated modes of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, China doesn't need to march through North Korea
yeah.
in this day and age. They can just launch it from all the islands that they're building in the South Pacific Sea. So Pyongyang ties its history to the Koguryo Kingdom, which lasted from the 1st to the 7th centuries. At its peak, it stretched from the Han River well into modern-day northeastern China. An alliance between the southern Korean kingdom of Silla and the Tang China led to the collapse of the Koguryo. Much of its territory and population were left in China's hands, and China's influence and power were extended, at least loosely, over subsequent kingdoms. The division of Korea after World War II between the two Cold War camps only reinforced the message to North Korea. A divided Korea is weak, a Korean dependent upon foreign power is exploitable, and true independence and security come only from self-reliance and indigenous strength. And they have been pursuing nuclear weapons since the 60s. Now, part of the indigenous strength is, we've talked in the past about Juche, which is the philosophy that Kim Il-sung, the founder of North Korea, created. And it's basically a religion that says the North Korean people are the greatest, most racially pure people on the planet, and they don't need the rest of the world. They can do anything if they put their minds to it. So basically, they're Gen Z kindergarten teachers.
All right, before it was cool?
Yeah, exactly right. Now, people make the comparison between the North Koreans and Libya, and the difference is that North Korea has tens of thousands of American soldiers on its borders, and, you know, it's aimed at a U.S. capital. And there's a lot of allies like Japan, Russia, and China, which are close, and they're not going to risk nuclear war. So when people say that, you know, like John Bolton was talking about Libya's denuclearization as a potential strategy, and then people pointed out the obvious that we just sucked the leadership out as a vacuum and then created a terrorist state, That's not necessarily going to happen here because the Middle East and the Far East are two very different mentalities for sure. Go ahead.
And the other thing is, like, if I really think if the United States really did have to invade North Korea,
mm-hmm.
I really think that Russia and China would probably go there first. Like, no. We got this.
Right.
Back up. You're too close.
Yeah. Now, antiwar.com had a great article on this, antiwar.com, which you should read every day, Korea mm-hmm. and the Geopolitics of the Impossible. And, you know, this guy, which I wish, it's here. Let me see. Let me look at his name. Let me give him Daniel? Credit.
Wasn't it
John Pfeffer?
Oh, I was wrong.
So John Pfeffer basically wrote this great article about this, which I'll put in the show notes. People don't believe Pyongyang because everything they say is nonsense a lot of times in public. But look at the recent announcement of the nuclear suspension. As a number of skeptics point out, the North Korean government wasn't really saying anything radically new. It had already declared in March its willingness to maintain a moratorium on testing. And then you had the damage. All of this is true. Let's start with the test site. Yes, the nuclear test site set off several small earthquakes and a number of tunnels at the site collapsed. But as 38 North points out, there is no basis to conclude that the Pyongyang-ri nuclear test site is no longer viable for future nuclear testing. There remain two portal areas located in more pristine, competent rock that can be used for future tests. They haven't used any other site. As for the moratorium on testing, Victor Cha says, this is not a denuclearization statement. It is a statement that North Korea can be responsible as a nuclear weapon state. So they're basically saying, like, hey, we can self-police ourselves. We know how to take care of this. It didn't make the discontinuation of testing contingent on anything else. Granted, it can be reversed, but it's still an important signal of the willingness to negotiate. So they voluntarily said, we'll denuclearize, or we'll start working towards that. And the document that they put together, it's the first time the North Koreans have actually agreed to denuclearization. So he kind of talks about for Moon to succeed where his predecessors failed, he should pursue three principles. Quid pro quo. First, the South can't simply buy the North's participation as Kim Dae-jung initially tried. For this third attempt at reunification to work, it must have something in the South. There must be something in it for the South as well.
Right.
Because South Koreans, their politicians, their people need some benefit as well. And he talks about the Kaesong Industrial Complex that serves as the equitable approach where tens of thousands are provided jobs and training for North Korean workers, as well as a cut of the pie for the North Korean government, and South Korean companies get cheaper labor.
Mm-hmm.
Second, Moon needs to get bipartisan support in his country, because without bipartisan support, it's going to be very difficult for him to succeed because some others have failed as you've transitioned administrations in South Korea. It's all fallen apart.
Yep.
He should also welcome more international thought. But he writes, Korean steps towards peace, denuclearization, and reunification also should have substantial civil society buy-in from groups in South Korea, their counterparts in East Asia, and like-minded groups in Europe and North America. It's going to be an international agreement, kind of like the Iranian agreement. There's a lot at stake here, and man, do you think Donald Trump can do it? Because, you know, he could go in there and want a win, and you hear all these pundits talking about, oh, it's about what are we going to get out of it? What are we going to get out of it? How about we, like, denuclearize? How about you just be happy with the fact that there's peace on the Korean Peninsula?
Yeah, about that.
You know, and so Donald Trump has a few chips to play. First, we have U.S. sanctions. All right, the U.S. sanctions, I mean, these run deep. Like, I was looking at the list. We've mentioned North Korea and blocked North Korean trade in the Export-Import Bank of 45, Bretton Woods of 45, the UN Participation Act of 45, State Department Basic Authority Acts of 56, the Trade Act of 74, the Export Administration of 79, the Iran, North Korea, Syria Non-Proliferation Act of 2000. This is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 different, including the return of North Korea to the state sponsors of terrorism in 2017. So there's a lot of U.S. sanctions, and those probably are not going to get touched. But there's a lot of resolutions in the United Nations, you know, starting with the Security Council Resolution 1718 in 2006, 2017, and a bunch of sanctions last year that really can hurt and cripple their economy, because what it does is it affects the ability to trade. The UN sanctions affect their ability to trade with China, Russia, South Korea, Vietnam, and other countries that don't necessarily have the moral issue with trading with North Korea that we do. So look for the North really to focus on those UN resolutions, and that's something that Donald Trump can really play with.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Or just giving like the ability for the United States of Marines to or Navy to protect their boats from shipping
right.
from Somali pirates or other things that are out in the water, which the United States military does for most shipping lanes out there.
Yeah. I want to read this entire article because it's so good, but I'm not going to, okay, because it's long. And it's at theamericanconservative.com, written by Peter Van Buren. What if Kim Jong-un is looking to liberalize?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Just sit back in your chair. He basically starts out talking about Deng Xiaoping, who in 79 rose to power and then started to open everything up. And Deng signed an agreement with President Jimmy Carter that covered his security needs, diplomatically papered over long simmering political issues like the status of Taiwan, and allowed him to introduce changes that led to China's economic ascendance. A key sign that Kim is headed the same way is the extraordinary number of concessions he's made about in the upcoming summits. He's seeking a formal end to the 50 war. So when you hear all these, like the Chuck Todds of the world going, we've given them a meeting with the president and we've gotten nothing in return. That's just not true. It's just flat out not true. And it is Washington groupthink.
Sounds good.
Yeah, which we'll get to in a moment, but it's not true. He's seeking to end the war. He's going to basically give a massive win to his quote-unquote opponent, Moon, who's also the son of North Korean refugees, ahead of the June 13th elections. He announced denuclearization, and he'll no longer insist that we remove our troops. Trump could never agree to troop reductions at this early stage and could never move into a summit if denuclearization was non-negotiable. Kim also announced the end of his signature domestic policy, the parallel advance of defense and domestic economy. His father only promoted the defense called Sogun, where basically his domestic policy was solely focused on building their military. And then Kim Jong-un came in and said, we're going to build our military and our domestic economy. And he is announcing that he is going to focus more on the domestic economy. At a recent Workers' Party meeting. Now, this is important because this is on state TV. This is to the Workers' Party. This is in public in North Korea, not in a private room in South Korea where his people can't hear it. He said it was time to focus on the nation's resources on rebuilding its economy, a clear signal to domestic elites that he is aware of their desire for a better life. He was even hanging out with some K-pop stars. What?
Just hanging out with the K-pop stars.
Yeah, I know, yeah. He's like a little superstar. You know, and then he talks about the economic zones that I talked about earlier. And he encourages Trump not to fall prey to establishment fears. He writes, political opponents will claim they'll just renege. You just wait. They will make the same we beat the other guy statements Kim and Trump will make for their domestic audiences. Media is already teeing up denuclearization is a straw man, claiming that if Trump comes home and the North still retains its weapons, he has failed. Such remarks are ahistorical nonsense. Denuclearization is a process, not an event. The Obama-era Iran Accords required 2 years of negotiation that didn't even involve the actual weapons. The U.S.-Soviet Cold War progress was measured in baby steps strung out over decades. Fast-track denuclearization has its history, too, in the failures of Libya and Iraq. Success will be measured as North Korea engages in the international system, thus reducing the threat of war as a base for reducing the weapons. Reviewing, and I love this line, reviewing the last 10 years of Western political thought on North Korea, it is staggering how poorly predictions have panned out. There has been no succession struggle, no societal collapse, no coup, no war, and no progress. It has painted one picture. The West is intellectually blocked from considering another. That is the most dangerous thing afoot as the 2018 summit looms. And so they're absolutely right. It is disturbing how the media, and I haven't really seen this, but you watch, like, I was reading the New York Times in my prep as to Korea's talk piece, Trump's bargaining chips slip away. Listen to this paragraph. The talk of peace is likely to weaken the two levers that Mr. Trump used to pressure Mr. Kim to come to the bargaining table. A resumption of regular diplomatic exchanges between the two Koreas, analysts said, will inevitably erode the crippling economic sanctions against the North, while Mr. Trump will find it hard to threaten military action against a country that is extending an olive branch. So the thinking in this news article is that it's a bad thing that Donald Trump can't threaten them with military action anymore because the North and South are talking and America is engaging in peace talks with them. Isn't peace talks the goal?
Depends on where you get your IRA at.
I guess. Okay,
if your IRA is in like Stratford, Boeing.
Right.
You're like, oh, what are you doing?
Right. It's just amazing how...
And to get these F-35s off the ground.
Go ahead, Harry.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. You got stuff to say, do it. Say it.
You're right. It's just more of like they won't accept just because it happened under Trump and didn't happen under Obama.
Like the thought of Donald Trump getting a Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
Has to be panic-inducing for people in the New York Times.
Trust me, I don't want any president. I don't think a president should have a Nobel Peace Prize.
No,
but the absurdity that and then there's massive jokes about like, well, he didn't do anything. He didn't make this happen. All right, there's a lot of things Obama didn't make happen. He got credit for it.
Yeah,
I don't.
Well, he really. I mean, his tough stance has been a part of it.
Yeah,
because I think part of Un's calculation is not only the rising pressure in his country, it's the rising pressure of the United States, and also his weakened capabilities now with this collapse.
Correct. And watching the stuff that's going on with China and Russia, and then noticing there's too many variables right there going around him, and that they can't really be sure of one thing.
Right.
And can they really lean on Russia? Russia's already got in, messing with stuff in the Middle East. They're low on funds and doing other stuff. So will they come over? Possibly not to help you.
Right.
China, they're just entered a trade war. They didn't enter it.
Right. China has always had a dim view of North Korea. Right. Kim Jong-un got a meeting with Xi Jinping, the president, the ruler of China for life.
Yeah.
And he was just like nonplussed.
Right. Yeah. And I think their response was like, you need to cut it out or that'll be, my vacation town.
Right. Exactly. Right.
I'm going to turn that to my little vacation country.
Yeah. Go ahead.
They say that the ridiculous of it is like the way they're already swinging it, and the other, but those are really smart because one, this president is brand new. If getting into it, you can also help Trump become a 2-term president with this,
right?
I know. I just threw open my own mouth saying
that.
And that's one will let you guarantee some bit of stability through these baby step talks as you move through.
Right.
And the other thing was when people talk about denuclearization, there's a lot of things you just can't turn off. Some things are safer as they are. It's whole units and working, and then they are turning on off and putting, you know, and trying to find somewhere to store.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, like, because turn it off. It's like, where are you going to store it now? It's going to be doing its thing for the next 1,000 years.
Yeah. Like, let's look at the actual declaration, because I printed off the actual declaration and read through it. I mean, listen to the complication of what these two countries are talking about. You know, they talk about they met at the Peace House on the 27th with Kim coming into South Korea and then pulling the South Korean president into North Korea. And they stood there and talked for 30 minutes and held hands and hung out. You know, they write and they both signed this agreement that says the two leaders sharing the firm commitment to bring a swift end to the Cold War relic of longstanding division and confrontation, to boldly approach a new era of national reconciliation, peace, and prosperity, and to improve and cultivate inter-Korean relations in a more active manner, declares the following. They are going to reconnect blood relations and, you know, bring forward the future of co-prosperity and unification facilitated by comprehensive and groundbreaking achievements. And basically, they're resuming something that they had stopped last year, which is families from the North and the South are granted the ability to meet each other. So if you had two sisters, for instance, or a mother and daughter or whatever, you can meet at the DMZ and spend some time together. So they're resuming that. They affirm the principle of determining the destiny of the Korean nation on their own accord and agreed to bring forth the watershed moment for the improvement of the relations and fully implement all existing agreements and declarations, which I think is significant. They agreed to hold dialogue and negotiations at a high level. They agreed to establish a joint liaison office with representatives in Kaesong, so they can work together. They've also reinstalled the telephone, so they have the ability to have direct access from the president to the president. And they agreed to encourage more active cooperation at all levels with a sense of national reconciliation and unity. And they're going to hold special events. They're going to participate jointly in international sporting events. North and South Korea will swiftly resolve the humanitarian issues that resulted from the division of the nation and to convene the inter-Korean Red Cross meetings. More reunions. They are going to implement some new projects that never got done from the 2007 agreement, including a transportation corridor. They are going to make joint efforts to alleviate the danger of war. North and South Korea agreed to completely cease all hostile acts against each other in every domain, including land, air, and sea, including military actions that they take in the DMZ, like the broadcasts on loudspeakers and leaflets on both sides.
So Taylor Swift listens are going to go down.
Yeah, exactly. They used to just blast music all night long into North Korea. They're going to open up some. They had some clashes in the West Sea, and so now they're going to work to open that up so it's safe for people to fish. They're going to hold frequent meetings between the two militaries. They are going to bring an end to the armistice. They reaffirm the non-aggression agreement. They agreed to carry out disarmament in a phased manner and start degrading the confidence building in both sides. They're going to hold trilateral meetings with the U.S. and China. And this one is the main one. They agree the common goal of realizing through complete denuclearization a nuclear-free Korean peninsula. So I just think that the two sides, I think Kim Jong-un is not his father and grandfather, and he doesn't face the same world that they faced, nor does he face the same challenges. And so it's the first go-around with him. And if he lies, he lies, okay? They already have ICBMs, and they already have nuclear capabilities. Okay, if they agree to denuclearize with the United States, then they have the IAEA from the UN coming in and doing inspections. I read one article from a former member of the IAEA that said the North Koreans were extremely easy to work with. They were super polite. They were never in any danger. They were forthcoming with information, completely different than the Iraqis and Libya, where you were taking your life into your own hands. So, to me, it's what's the alternative? Okay, well, you can't trust the North Koreans. You shouldn't talk to them. You shouldn't make agreements with them. Shouldn't do this. Okay, so what's the alternative? Like, they're going to make nuclear weapons either way. At least we're going to make it harder on them if we're in a peace agreement with them than it is if we ratchet down sanctions or, God forbid, have a military action. Like, right. the conservatives and the hawks are offering no solution.
Mm-hmm.
They're just offering, don't trust them, don't trust them, don't trust. Like, okay, well, then what's the alternative? What's your solution to the problem? Because you haven't done a very good job so far.
Make them fat with McDonald's.
Is that your solution?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Kind of hard to fight a war if you're shoving your face full of Big Macs.
Didn't Kim say he wanted to bring McDonald's to North Korea?
Yes.
Yeah. I just look at the foreign policy establishment of this country and in the media is out of control. They don't, like, I look at this and I see something completely different than what these people see. And I don't get it. Like, how could these people be lusting for war the way that they are?
I don't know. Like I said, it all depends where your IRA is at.
Right. Yeah, so Mark Landler in the Times, this is from The Nation. South and North Korea prepared to discuss an end to the Korean War. This was also a really, really well-written article. And they basically talk about... In the latter half, the pessimism and the consensus and how it just was all basically the mainstream media is trying to push us into a war when they want peace.
Yeah.
So check that out in the show notes.
Yeah. So. Which was crazy to watch. Like, just the video. I remember watching the video on Facebook, scrolling down and watching the two leaders meeting on the border, shaking hands, holding hands, and then watching Kim cross over.
Yeah.
I was blown away.
It was awesome.
I didn't think what I was watching was real.
Last year was one of the scariest times in all of the relation. I mean, I was researching it. So when we went to war with them,
yeah,
I understood them.
Yeah, considering like most of us, like around our age group, you know, most of us was made aware of really how with the issues of North Korea because of channel, like me, Channel One News and Lisa Ling.
Yep.
You know, and that's like, oh, what's North Korea? Oh, it's just some doofy. Whoa, what did they do? You know, and then here it is now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good stuff.
Yeah.
So that is good news to balance out the bad news at the beginning.
Carly did post some other notes and stuff like that.
Okay.
I went ahead to copy it, put that on the trailer card, and marked you already.
All right, cool. Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes. Carly from earlier, who was giving us some information, we'll have some further information there. Now, I just mentioned a Nation article, and here's a Mother Jones article. How dare you? We've looked at National Review. We've looked at the New York Times. We've looked at
Stratfor.
We've looked at antiwar.com. We've looked at Reason. We've looked at Mother Jones, The Nation. We've been all over the place today.
Next Lawn.
So listen, you gotta go. You'd never know what you're going to find. And I found a great breakdown of the Golden State. Do you know about the Golden State Killer? Like, you've probably heard of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Lacey likes to. Most people's wives would like to watch that morbid stuff on that channel.
Right. So 48 Hours brilliantly took their show and made it a podcast. And so they just released one on the Golden State Killer. This dude was a real piece of shit.
Yes.
Like, he is the guy that they have in custody now is 72-year-old Joseph James D'Angelo.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a police officer who committed crimes across California in like 20 different jurisdictions,
mm-hmm.
raping young women, like 13-year-old girls. Mm-hmm. You know, like he would break into a house and there was a meeting at one point, okay? And he had only struck women. And the news reported that he's only struck women, and so he changed his pattern and he started breaking in, raping the wives and killing the men. In one case, he like stacked dishes on the guy's back and made him listen while he raped his wife, and then like killed them both. There was a meeting where a guy said, you know, if he breaks into my house, I'm going to kill him, and the Golden State Killer targeted that guy. Because he must have been in the meeting and nobody knew it.
Right.
He's just a real awful, horrendous person. And no one's ever, like, they've had some leads, but he was very careful.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense that he was a cop because he only left trace DNA.
Right.
DNA didn't exist when he was doing these crimes. Somewhere along the way he stopped. Patton Oswalt's wife, Michelle McNamara, who passed away, wrote a book, and it's supposed to be a really well-written book about the Golden State Killer, which kind of brought attention back to the case.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, they made an announcement that they arrested this guy. Well, I want this guy arrested. Okay, I want this guy to pay for the crimes that he committed. But I'm also real creeped out how they did it. And I think it opens up a larger ethical discussion. Investigators tracked him down through public genetic profiles posted online by his family members. Now, it wasn't 23andMe. It wasn't the Ancestry stuff. It was GED Match.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you can download your information from the 23andMe and upload it to GED Match, which is an open source, you know, pre-23andMe genealogy thing. Mm-hmm. Where you send and you can, and so somebody had uploaded the stuff and the genetic codes matched with the DNA sample that they had. So this person who they're interviewing, author of Inside the Cell, The Dark Side of Forensic DNA, New York Law Professor Aaron Murphy, basically said, you know, what California did is they allow familial searches. So in its convicted offender database, and so they probably searched that, didn't get a match, and then they don't know how they exactly got the genetic code into GED match. Like, you have to spit into a vial with Ancestry and 23andMe. Obviously, if you've got DNA from 25 years ago, it's not going to work. So somehow they got it in there and they found a match, and then that led to leads that then traditional police work led to the to this person. You know, 23andMe has 7 million profiles. So one thing that she, listen, it's a good thing they caught this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the reason I wanted to bring this up, and you don't have anything to worry about if you've done nothing wrong, Harry. That old gag, which I agree with, if you didn't rape and kill many, many people in the 70s and 80s,
right,
you wouldn't be in prison. But there's also a larger privacy concern that if you don't like the fact that Facebook shares your email with advertisers, then you probably should be more careful about your entire genetic code being uploaded to an internet. But
if you share, you know, DNA with some family, you don't control them.
Exactly.
Just like you don't have control of some friend of yours on a social media platform that decides to do some stupid quiz.
Right. And so she says 23andMe only responds to legal process inquiries. They will not voluntarily expose information about their clients. So they're kind of shielding information. But has anybody like really pushed 23andMe and Ancestry on how they're protecting this information? What happens if they get hacked and all those codes that's in these XML files gets hacked?
I'm sure it's protected like Equifax protected your credit information.
Thank you, Harry. I'm glad you're being optimistic. There, she writes, she says, there are a lot of warnings on these sites that they can't guarantee your privacy. If it only affects me, it's one thing. If I'm making a decision that affects my brother, sister, mother, father, children, essentially everybody I'm related to, I think that's really different. I don't know the answer to how best to manage that problem, but I do think it's a serious issue. One member of the family can essentially forfeit the genetic privacy of an entire family for generations. Mm-hmm. It could be unnerving down the road. So I think you should just be aware. I think it's cool. And I'll be honest, I'm still probably going to do the Ancestry.com. Like, Abdul did it, and it showed, like, the path of his ancestors, and it seemed really cool. And I'm really into genealogy. I'm curious about it. I'd like to see the health stuff of it. I don't, like, I'm not Mr. Privacy like you, but I'm sure you read that and you go, there, I'm not only am I not doing it, I'm putting a cease and desist on my entire family. Right?
I wish I can, but I've got a lot of bootlicking status in my family. And some people that I'm sure have eaten lead paint. And then there's a lot of people that, you know, because everyone's got those aunts and those family members that vary into their genealogy or right. where their family come from. That's how I can trace my family back the way it can. I don't know if they did the DNA testing, but they know they do that stuff.
Would you like to talk about your ancestors from England and what they were up to, Harry?
The reason why.
you were involved in the slave trade in the past?
Family. Well, involves a heavy word.
operating.
You know, you got to make a buck. And possibly fought against the United States in the revolution and then got land in England. So, and then defunct to Canada after a certain other things happened. It's a convoluted process, you know, of, you know, land grab and stuff like that. And then eventually right. became United States citizens after a.
Right.
But stuff happens, you know.
Stuff happens. Like the Django Unchained, only you're not Django. You're the candy man.
It's okay. I'm a little worried about what upset we may find out. Like, you know, my family owns your family. That's what I'm worried about.
You were
about.
Literally the black market.
Yes.
Thank you for that joke, Stone. So.
Are you still doing Stone jokes?
Speaking of your family, Harry. And your family being bootlicking status, are they all Democrats?
Majority of them are, yes, yes. District 7 Democrats, too, by the way.
Okay, how are they handling the Kanye West stuff?
Just like you would expect. And it has been hilarious because I've rabbled on them like how they would flip on any black person the moment they switched and call them a coon or Uncle Tom the moment they do anything dissent. And as soon as it happened, boom, I'm like, look what you just did. He didn't do anything. He didn't even vote for somebody. Nope. He just flipped on somebody.
Kanye West basically came out and has been, he wore a Donald Trump hat. It started with him saying that he liked the way that Candace Owen thinks. Mm-hmm. Candace mm-hmm. Owen is connected to Turning Point USA, which was formed over the last couple of years by a guy named Charlie Kirk. And it's basically like a college-aged Republican group, I guess some sort of competitor, like the Republican version of Students for Liberty. Mm-hmm. And Candace Owen is a YouTuber. Red Pill Black was her YouTube name. That's how she came to prominence. She's a young African American, young black woman. Harry does not like when I use the term African American. So that set off a shitstorm. He lost 9 million Twitter followers. He was just Uncle Tom and all over the place. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So then he started ranting about, listen, you need to be able to think for yourself. Yeah. Like, free thought is important. Like, just because, look at Chicago, like, there's almost nothing that he said that if you go and read that you would disagree with at all.
Yeah, and there's some people calling him not black, even though, you know, Chicago guy, you know.
He grew up middle class-ish.
So what? Majority of some of these black people that say that they grew up middle class.
Right. Okay? Rick Ross was a prison guard.
Yeah. Come on. Yeah. Look, a lot of these guys, like, I even had like my thing. I had one of my friends like, oh, he's not black. It's like, dude, you went to Brebeuf.
Brebeuf is a very wealthy Catholic school here.
Yeah. And it's like, how dare you? It's like, you even questioned my blackness. Dude, I at least went to public schools.
You went to Northwest.
I went to Northwest.
You went to school with Miranda. That should tell you something.
All right. Questioning whether I know black people or black history, you should question yourself. I know I'm black.
You're basically Uncle Remus. Is it what's the cartoon?
Uncle Ruckus.
Ruckus. Oh, okay. Uncle Remus is another extremely racist cartoon.
Yeah.
But Uncle Remus. Yeah, so he was just tweeting about love and saying a lot of what he said I haven't disagreed with. Today he was quoting Thomas Sowell, for God's sake, so which is awesome. So yeah, I think it's an important cultural thing because it's the first time someone of his stratosphere has basically just taken it right to, like, I think he's probably the most famous turncoat towards. I mean, some of the stuff that he has said, you know, 2005, Kanye, you know, George Bush doesn't care about black people after Hurricane Katrina, All Fall Down and the College Dropout album. He raps, I say fuck the police. That's how I treat them. We buy our way out of jail, but we can't buy freedom. We'll buy a lot of clothes, but we don't really need them. Things we buy cover up what's inside because they made us hate ourselves and love they wealth. In crack music and late registration in 2005, he rapped, how we stop the Black Panthers. Ronald Reagan cooked up the answer. You can't hear that? What Gil Scott was hearing when our heroes and heroines got hooked on heroin? Gorgeous in 2010's My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. And at the airport, they check all through my bag and tell me it's random. As long as I'm in the polo smiling, they think they got me. But they would try to crack me if they ever see me, black me. And what's a black beetle anyways, a fucking roach? I guess that's why they got me sitting here in a fucking coach. New Slaves, 2013. Meanwhile, the DEA teamed up with the CCA trying to lock... I'll let you say that word... up, they're trying to make new slaves. See, that's what privately owned prison. Get your peace today. Black skinhead, watch who you bring home. They see a black man with a white woman at the top floor. They gonna come to kill King Kong. And in 2016, in feedback, hands up. We just doing what the cops taught us. Hands up, then the cops shot us. So, you know, he's now quoting Thomas Sowell after, you know, being fairly... I mean, none of that's radical. I mean, that's... I agree with most of that. Yeah. You know, like, I don't think...
And the Thomas Sowell.
And the Thomas Sowell. I don't think that Ronald Reagan created heroin, but obviously his drug policies furthered destroy the black community. Mm-hmm. But he's probably the most famous person to kind of, like, go conservative that I can think of.
Did he really go conservative, though?
He's not... No. I mean, he said his hero was Emma Gonzalez in a tweet over the weekend. But when you're tweeting Thomas Sowell and you're meeting with Candace Owen and you're like, you're heading down that rabbit hole. There's a part of me that thinks, okay, he's got an album coming out in 3 weeks. So he's trying to, what's the most controversial countercultural thing you can be? A right wing Christian conservative. He's going to start hanging out with Joel Osteen next.
If any luck, we can get him go libertarian.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's not nuts.
Get him on stage with James Weeks.
So Chance the Rapper tweeted out, black people don't have to be Democrats.
Yeah.
Your assessment of that, Harry?
True. Well, did you see? You see what happened? Like, well, look what happened. Okay, like with a lot of people with Coleon Noir did a interview with a black gentleman named Killer Mike, and they did an interview on guns, and then black community went after him for 2 whole weeks. And there's like, how can you say this about guns? It's like, no, every black person, you know, you need a handgun and an AK-47 or AR-15. It's right. Like, you know, it's like, I was like, no, this is what you need. And, you know, and watch him just get vilified through the whole, like, the whole thing, and lies get taught about the whole interview with him and with Noir.
Right.
Which I used to, I've been watching Noir's videos for years, but I love his stuff. I don't agree with him on everything. Mm-hmm. We got some, you know, but because he's a Republican, and to me, he's not right enough. He's a commie. But, and it just doesn't surprise me. Like, there was the, Runaway Slave Project?
Uh-huh.
I can't remember that movie now. I wouldn't remember seeing it in the movie theater. What is it? Now I'm drawing a huge blank.
Was it the one that just came out?
Mm-mm.
Was it a period piece or what?
No, it was... shoot. I can't believe I'm brain farting on us. See, this is why I shouldn't go to work. I should just stay at home and just watch Gunther.
So let me read this. Chance the Rapper said black people don't have to be Democrats. And so, ooh boy, did he get it. Chance is a protege of Kanye, calling him a mentor and big homie in several tweets. But that was Wednesday. Earlier today, yesterday, Chance had to recant his apostasy. I never support someone such as Trump who'd talk about Chicago as if it's hell on earth and then take steps to make life harder for the most disenfranchised among us. My statement about black folk not having to be Democrats, though true, was a deflection from the real conversation and stemmed from a personal issue with the fact that Chicago has had generations of Democratic officials with no investment or regard for black schools, neighborhoods, or black lives. But again, said that shit at the wrongest time. Chicago's not had a Republican mayor since 1931.
Yep.
As with many industrial cities, Nick Gillespie writes in Reason.
Detroit, Flint.
Control there flipped from prohibition supporting GOP machines to Democratic machines due to changing demographics and shifting attitudes toward Catholic and Jewish immigrants. Chance was immediately called out as a hypocrite for defending Kanye West. It's not difficult not to understand why he felt a need to separate himself from his comments about blacks, but not needing to be Democrats. Over the past 70 years, no voting bloc has been more closely identified with the party than blacks. Since 48, when the Democrats inserted a civil rights plank in their platform, a majority of blacks have identified as Democrats. No Republican presidential candidate has polled more than 15% of the African-American vote since 1960, when Nixon received 32%. So he then goes on to talk about, Nick Gillespie says, the car you drove, the food you eat, the music you listen to, none of these things are the same as they were back in 78, 88, or 98. Why is the political party the same? And in many ways, Chance, the rapper, also tweeted this, in many ways, Donald Trump ran as an independent. Not only did he openly attack leaders and infrastructure of the GOP, he shredded its dogma on free trade and other issues. Chance's timeline might be a bit optimistic, but there's no question that he's pointing out the right general direction, not simply for the presidency, but for the future of America, too. Independence is what they're both saying. You don't have to have groupthink. You don't have to be a herd of people voting in the same block. You're not betraying anything if you just think independently.
The movie I was thinking of is called Runaway Slave. It's put out in 2012. It's from Reverend C.L. Bryant. It's a story of journey across America to find answers. A one-time NAACP local chapter president, Reverend Bryant, discovers that buying into the entitlement mindset of progressives and Black Lives Matter, the black community has traded one form of tyranny for another. And it's actually a very good movie. He was showing like some really good forms of like in Atlanta, where just the same blocks where blacks were traded as property. You see blacks still sitting on there from the from the whole like beyond the sucking on the teeth of the United States government and being sit there in the situation that they are from being from Democratic policies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like I said, it was a very interesting movie. It's free to watch on Prime right now. So if you are a Prime Amazon Prime member, you can go ahead and watch Runaway Slave.
Put that in the Trello for me.
Okay.
And I'll make sure to link that in the show notes. Yeah, I think a lot of what Kanye is saying, I think most of us would agree with. You know what I hate? This is just a personal point of personal privilege. You know, I don't like Kanye's music, but I think he's right here. This happened to me today, like in the Legal Liberty group. Someone was saying, Roger, I'm not a huge fan of Chris Spangle, but you weren't correct in the way that you handled that. And I just responded back, why aren't you a huge fan of me? The person was thoughtful enough to just reply back and say, I was throwing you under the bus to gain cheap political points.
He's honest.
Yeah. And so we talked a little bit, but yeah, like people go, I don't like this thing. Listen, I don't agree with blah, 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 but it doesn't add more credibility to what you're saying. It just makes you look like an old white man. Like, it's such a boomer thing to do is like, you know, I don't agree with blah, 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 but they've got a blah, blah, blah. And like, you don't have to like wedge that in there to soften your point. In fact, the more softening of your point, the less effective it is. Like, quit trying to curry favor with other people. Political dialogue is not fashion. And that is a lot of what Kanye West is saying. This isn't about fashion, okay? You don't wear your political ideology the same way that you wear Dior or Ray-Bans, okay? This political speech in America has become, it's just fashion. It has no meaning. It's like this girl who wore the Chinese dress to prom, you know, just wears this dress. It looks great on her. She's a cute girl, 18, not a political bone in her body, not trying to be a political person, you know, just going to prom.
Yep.
Some dude, well, quit, my culture is not for your appropriation. Not for nothing, but like, she doesn't look all that Aryan to me. You know what I mean? But so like, we've taken the most like 60% of millennials are multi-ethnic.
Anyways, yes.
Like, we were beaten in school. I don't know about Northwestern, but in Plainfield High School, which was 98% white, we only learned about the civil rights movement and slavery and how all that was wrong. And you don't treat people differently. And everyone, it was like, I didn't have racial thoughts growing up. I didn't have racial thoughts until I got, until like Trump won. Then it's like, can you people leave me alone? You know, it just really is getting out of control. And like, this guy just tweets this out about this girl in a dress, and all of a sudden she's being bullied online for wearing a dress to her prom. It's in Twitter moments. And as Stephen Miller on Twitter pointed out, Red Steez, who's a hilarious follow, you know, Twitter is literally violating their own rules on bullying by putting this girl in moments and opening her up to more bullying. Twitter is actively helping bully this girl who made a choice to wear something for her, to her credit. She has not apologized. She says, I will not apologize. I did nothing wrong.
There you go.
Leave me alone.
Don't apologize. You know,
it's like the girl who put the gun in her waist belt. Mm-hmm. It's like she's trying to take a photo
for her group.
For her group, her friends. It's not a national news story. Mm-hmm. She's just a girl trying to put in her graduation photos a gun in her waistband.
Right.
Or a girl who is trying to show her friends her prom dress. She's not trying to show all of the world that she's like, okay, let's say this girl decided, you know what? I'm an 18-year-old white female, and I'm sitting in, let's say she's in Minneapolis. I don't know where she's from. In Minneapolis, Minnesota. You know what? I've really been having a lot of imperialistic thoughts lately. I really want to show those Chinese people who's boss. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go get a traditional garb and get that made as a dress. Actually, I won't get it made. I'll just buy it off the rack, meaning somebody else produced this line of clothing. It was their thought. I just think it's cute and makes my butt look nice.
Yeah.
And I think my friends are really going to die because it will be unique. But the main thing is that it will show all of China and every Chinese American that I, as a white woman, have supremacy. Like, she's not having that thought. Like, and as much as you want to, like, the more you try to shove, well, just because you don't have those thoughts doesn't mean that you're not an imperialist. Okay. Like, the more you cry wolf, the less we care about real issues. Like, the fact that Nigerian men are being sold in Libya right now as slaves in open air auctions.
Right.
There are open air auctions in Libya and across Africa right now for slaves. It's not a hidden slave trade anymore. It's open air auctions. People are being sold into slavery to work on farms in Africa. That's an issue. That's an issue we should care about. That is an issue that involves race, that involves discrimination, that involves imperialism, like all the stuff that you're fighting about. But when you have us focused on a girl's dress, we don't give a shit when you actually cry wolf, social justice warriors.
Listen to your colonizer. Stay in your lane.
All right, I'm sorry.
Take your bland potato salad that no one wants,
my
Karen.
My white privilege is spewing all over the place.
Nobody wants your bland-ass potato salad.
Right.
Okay, you stay over there, colonizer. All right? Got to make sure you don't go off anywhere and do things, because we give you an inch, end up in India taking tea and stuff.
Give us an inch, we'll take all of the Near East.
Yep. You know, okay. All right. Hey, I saw that TV show. I saw what happened when someone gave an idea, Julius Caesar the idea of the New World. He just took over all that, too. Okay. All right. By the way, you know, I'm speaking of a what is it? Legends of Tomorrow is a CW show.
Never seen it.
It's a great show. It's pretty awesome. Julius Caesar got a book of the fall of Rome, and he's like, "We're gonna march on Rome now. We're gonna go visit Brutus first."
Nice. not necessarily historically accurate. It sounds like.
Oh no! The fact that he can read English is
Harry. I would love for you now to explain all the reasons you're an Uncle Tom.
Because I like to protect black people. Oh, I'm sorry. I actually read the book.
What?
I read the book. Read the book.
What
that's
book?
Like, that's the Uncle Tom's Cabin. That's the other thing. It's like I remember getting so upset about it and hearing Abdul talk about it. And Abdul was talking about was like, you know what? Read the book. Read the book before you call me an Uncle Tom. Read the book and understand it. Because I don't think you do. I think you just see this term. And you think that you know, think you, and this term means something, but you have never read Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Right.
And actually understood what was going on in that book. Because if you did, you wouldn't call me Uncle Tom.
Right. You going to explain it to us? Because I haven't read Uncle Tom.
Read the book. do the work. Read the book.
I'm not a.
It's not a long book.
I'm more of a Henry Ward Beecher fan as opposed to a Harriet Ward Beecher Stowe. Her brother was a little bit cool. They're both from Indiana.
Uncle Tom did a lot on protecting the slaves that are around him, actually. Right. Other than this whole, were his master's some friends in the book? Yes, right. They were. But there was also just showing the peculiar nation, the peculiar situation slavery really was.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, you know, like the slave master was planning on, and then if he didn't die, was planning on actually giving Uncle Thomas freedom.
Right.
You know, and working on doing that to the rest of the slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And because Uncle Tom did a lot to help train and protect every slave that he came encounter with when he even got slaved back in in the slave trade. So it wasn't like you like, oh, he's master's friend who's doing like, no, those were, I can't remember the other two characters' names that beat him and. But yeah, like I said, it's read the book.
So Kanye West, have you followed any of this? Like, what are your thoughts on it?
It's more like just typical what happens when any black person leaves the Democrat plantation. Mm-hmm. You go off and say anything like that. Him saying his stuff, same stuff. Like I remember going on when I used to talk about like just being like and that edge like edging into Republicanism and talking about and making Republican viewpoints.
Right.
Especially during the Bush era. So a lot of that doesn't surprise me. I'm trying to show that in my family's face and show them that. Personally, I loved it because I can crank Kanye music even louder and look at people. I've never listened to Kanye's song Power so many different times. You just crank it, especially you just go running like, yeah, Kanye. just a troll. It's been awesome. But yeah, it's more of just a mirror on like, well, look, just look at yourselves. Look what happened.
Right.
You know, like did he say something really radical? You know, and when it goes back to the whole like Alfie thing, it's like, think about it for a second. If you're so worried about Trump can do this and Trump to do that to you, then why would you even want any other type of government then?
Right.
When it comes down, yeah. So I always say something like, hey, man, a government that can do anything for you can do anything to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they can do that for you, they can take that away and do something worse.
Yeah. All right, well, that seems like a good place to stop. Wanted to do this question, but we're like 3 hours in. Should we do this question? Yeah, let's do this question. All right, listener letter time. Hello, Chris. This is Patrick writing us. I'm a very young libertarian, but I have loved my life since I became one. Once my eyes were opened, everything began to make more sense. Haha. My question for you, though, sir, is that I want to get more involved on the local level to make changes to my city that I live in. What would be the best plan of action or path to go down to do that? Thanks for all that you do. What are your thoughts?
First thing you got to do when you go to your local libertarian meeting is to make sure they are real libertarians.
If they are not, destroy them with logical fallacies and ad hominem attacks until they submit.
Exactly.
Twist every joke that they make until they cry.
To me personally, one, I think the best thing of that attack is to understand that not every libertarian, just most of the internet libertarians are dicks, which I have come from really being in the wall group, because before wall, I used to think every libertarian was a dick and stood away from most of them.
Right.
But knowing that, wow, that's just some of them on the internet. And first one, they're very, very nice, very, very cordial people. I think the best thing to do is to find out where your local libertarians meet and just hang out and just get to know the people, you know?
Yeah, I think if you want to get involved at the local level, you have a few options. I put myself to sleep.
Because are you going to tell them don't run into the traps of every new libertarian?
Well, that's going to happen. He's not going to listen to me.
Yeah, you're going to fall into this.
Right, he's going to do those anyways. I think it is important to learn libertarian ideology and continue to grow in libertarian philosophy. I mean, I still, even 10 years in, I constantly read or listen to stuff all the time. I just started listening actually to some of Thomas Sowell's books, Basic Economics. I'm sure people would, he claims to be a libertarian in some ways, and he's certainly not an Austrian economist, but I just started Black Rednecks and white liberals.
Yeah. My favorite book.
That and Basic Economics. So I'm always listening to some broader libertarian thing. Jeff Riggenbach narrates most of them on Audible. So I'm always kind of I'm always ingesting some overarching book or piece of history or philosophy or libertarian centric stuff. I think that's important, but there are a lot of libertarians who that's all they do. They never read the New York Times or any of the stuff that we read here tonight because, that's for statists.
Yeah.
I'm only going to read Rothbard and I'm not going to read the news because that's for statists.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not how you reach people. People want to understand issues, and through the talking of issues, things like Alfie Evans, you can say, who owns you? The government or you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you own yourself? And because people tune in wanting to know about Alfie Evans, and then they walk away going, I own myself, with that very libertarian concept.
I like to do the Reuters Roku app of how much time you have in that day, in the moment right now, to listen to the news. And they'll give you the news in whatever time you have. So if you've got 5 minutes, they'll just throw 5 minutes at,
that's cool,
at you real quick.
Yeah. I mean, so you have the libertarian philosophy piece, you have the current events piece, and then you've also got the political piece. You have to understand local politics if you want to get engaged with it. So meeting other local libertarians isn't going to be enough if you want to make a political difference. Go to your county meetings, not only your libertarian county meetings, but your county council meetings, your city council meetings. Nobody shows up to a county council meeting. And every county council has some $100 million project before them that they're trying to put their names on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can make a real difference by showing up with a camera. Like, the Boss Hog of Liberty has done a great job of building a news outlet with, a few hundred listeners in a small town, showing up to town meetings and live streaming it with their media outlet. And they've transformed in a year local politics.
Right.
Because, the newspaper doesn't go and stream live on Facebook the city council meetings,
mm-hmm.
And then give an hour long, give 10 minutes of analysis on it, on their podcast, interspersed mm-hmm. with farm reports or whatever Boss Hog does.
Yep.
Soybeans are out now.
I don't even know what that is.
I know. Soy boys. That's what Cade Coger's up to. Soy. He's planting his soy. Growing his own man boobs. Getting involved in local meetings is important. You can go as someone who plans to run for office. You can go as someone who is videotaping and putting it up on YouTube. You can go as someone who is just there to learn.
Yep.
I would not go there to be hostile. I absolutely hate when people go into those meetings or go into... It's like the Adam Kokesh approach does not work. If you were walking up to government officials with a camera in their face and being a nuisance, You one time even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
you can annoy them with questions, but don't like try to harass or humiliate them.
Right.
Because then you will never, ever, 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 ever get them to listen to you. And you will, and the time when you need to stop that $100 million project, you've already blown your capital by being a jerk and making yourself feel good in that moment of an instant gratification.
Yep. When you, the real politics of politics.
Right. Exactly. So the more you're around, I would listen to Boss Hog of Liberty because I think they've done a great job. You won't find a lot of the discussion relevant, but I think you'll find the tactics relevant. Mm-hmm. So, you know, starting a little media outlet with just a Facebook page, giving updates, streaming that stuff, you'll attract other libertarians through doing that. And then you can decide how you want to get involved from there. I mean, you know, don't run for office right away. Just because you've been interested in politics for 6 months, it doesn't mean that you should run for office because you don't know any policies.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of the traps.
You should never run for office if you don't know what you would do day one. Like, if you don't know how the job operates, you don't know what the scope of work would be. It's just like any other job. Okay, Harry just got a new job. Do you think Harry took the job not knowing what his daily tasks would be, not having some vague idea of strategy as to fix the problems that he's being hired to do?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with government work. Like, running on, I'm going to abolish all the government as you run for a city county council seat is stupid. You're never going to win, and you're wasting everyone's time. You're going to be so much more effective if you've spent 2 years going to city county council meetings, taking notes in a notebook that you can then refer back to later. You know all the players. The local political establishment says, you know, I disagree with him on some stuff, but he's a good guy. The Marion County Republican chairman was at work today.
Yeah.
And he told one of the he's a good guy. And it's because I don't treat him like a dick.
Yeah.
Like, this is a person I have significant disagreements on. Around drug laws, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy respects me. And so if I sat down and had a conversation when I needed to about X, Y, and Z, he listened to me. And it's because I haven't been a dick to him. And I've been around for 10 years, engaged in the process. Other people who are engaged in the political process respect other people engaged in the political process. Even if you're on different sides, you respect the fact that they're still showing up too. You know, like me and my Republican friends and Democrat friends, like, you'll probably see it on my social media. It's like, we still tease each other. We still give each other shit, but I still respect them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they respect that I've made some contributions too. So, you know, you shouldn't run for office if you don't know the people that you'd be working with. You don't know the policies that you try and enact. You don't know the job description. And if you think that you're going to run on vague libertarian philosophy and win, you're not only going to not win, you're going to lose, and you're going to make the party and the entire ideology look bad because you're not being relevant. The reason that you love We Are Libertarians, especially if you've made it this far into the episode, is that it's relevant. I make the content relevant to what you want to hear. And every time the content isn't current events, my downloads are half of what they normally are. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, if it's a vague philosophical discussion, you guys don't download that episode. You download Alfie and you download the things that you find relevant because that's what you and your friends are interested in that moment. And relevance is just very important.
Especially like when you're talking about like knowing what's going on. And knowing what's up. Take what James Neese has done in District 4 when he wants to talk about drug laws. The way he brings it into the, discussion because of the way his constituents, when he does win, is that if Indiana does not get ahead of this whole of either medical marijuana or, what's the other word I'm looking for? Brain fart. Of industrial hemp and turn that into a cash crop. We inside all the farming belt will be last. We'll be the only one still just planting corn and soybeans. Everyone else have been on this other cash crop and then, you know, we lose out. And that's losing Indiana jobs and losing Indiana money. Okay. So why remove something off the table for an Indiana farmer that could put food on their table and bring money to them? So making it relevant to them.
Right.
It, and knowing like the issues and going after this, like it's, and showing that, hey, and we're going to have examples, but that's knowing an issue that's going after the farmers. Cause it's just like, no, drug laws are for this violent, violent. But yeah, that's permanent to most people in inner cities, but to the farm town, it's like, whoa, 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 money, crops, you know? And honestly, if you really talk to James, he actually knows how farming actually works.
Right.
Strangely enough, it's very weird, but he's out there in the country.
Right. James is killing it. I really need to get him on Thursday because his election's Tuesday. So, all right. Final thoughts for the episode, Harry.
When it comes to the Alfie thing and the whole government owning you, it's, to me, that's, I don't want to, I'm always shocked and surprised, one, that people are shocked and surprised that something would happen like that in England.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, to me, just you're just not paying attention.
Right.
With the North Korea thing, it's, I have hope that it will be not complete, won't be completely open like South Korea is, South Korea being the America of Asia. It's more American mm-hmm. than anywhere else in Asia, but and probably end up probably being more China, but more China back in the 80s,
and, right.
you know, than it is China now.
Yeah.
But it will take a while to get there. And it's neat that we get to see the baby steps and I watch that go forward and possibly hear the authentic North Korean more, but be able to hear more of a North Korean authentic experience
right.
from the horse's mouth. And then understanding that in 30 to 50 years that no one will hopefully know North Korea like this.
Yeah. I mean, we don't think about East and West Germany anymore.
No.
I mean, that's been 30 years,
yeah.
20 years.
Well,
since- 20 years since it was broken up?
Well, you were in public school. You saw the Northeast Germany and West Germany maps on your... You need to get new maps.
But right, yeah. yeah. We were in grade school when they started redoing... I still have a globe, not this one, but I have a globe with the USSR on it.
Oh, yeah.
These things change all the time. I mean, there's... It's constantly changing. And the... It just is amazing to me that we've gone from a situation where it's never been more high stakes and more dangerous than it was last year with this situation. And we were doing episodes basically saying, like, I hope we don't die, to now having a ray of hope. And mm-hmm. even if he's playing the West and even if he's trying to play us for suckers, why wouldn't you enter into the negotiations? You know, and I don't think that the right and the hawks of the world are saying don't do that, but I think they probably John Bolton is not as much of a hawk as everybody makes him out to be in terms of he's not Paul Wolfowitz. Okay, let me say that. He wasn't really down with the invasion of Iraq, I think I've read.
Mm-hmm.
But he's very firm on denuclearization for North Korea. So he's not the war-crazed nut job that everybody makes him out to be. I think the mustache does him no favors because it makes him look like a cartoon character. But he's still a very hawkish person, and he's a person who is part of that calculus that he's going to put a lot of pressure on them. And so hopefully they don't push too hard and hopefully they don't blow this because this feels like a really good opportunity. And hopefully Kim really pushes to open up North Korea. Even if Trump and his team do something stupid, he continues doing it. And I think he's kind of cutting out in some ways the United States by going straight to South Korea, which I think is smart. And I think that's a good sign as well. So I don't know. It's like, why not have some hope?
mm-hmm.
Why not? Let's trust but verify, as Reagan used to say.
Yeah.
You know, let's have those conversations with them. And this is a long unwinding process.
Mm-hmm.
This is when if I yawn, Harry, yeah. This is when you talk. You go,
well, tomorrow will be a fun little hangout. You do need to finish the brake job. And so I might bring the camper out to the garage and talk politics, drink beers, and work on the brakes.
Yo.
It'll be fun.
I need new rear brakes. Can you help me do that?
We can do that for a little. Not this Wednesday. I'm doing my brakes, but we can do that for Loki. Well, how about you get some new tires, too?
Oh, I'm going to get new tires, but I don't need to spend $800 on new back, on new rear brakes.
Can I have $400?
I'm not giving you anything. I'm giving you a low-key wall episode.
Whoa, I want $400 for the rear brakes.
I can do it. I just need you to show me how.
Yeah, $400.
I'll just go to Jiffy Lube then.
Jiffy Lube. They'll tell you you got good tires too.
You give me brakes.
Yeah. Then this Saturday is Gunther's birthday, her first birthday. We'll be doing at the Meatloaf and Potato Studios. If you know where that is, come on, stop by. We're going to have ribs and everything. So
nice. All right, cool. Very good. Want to thank Craig DaCosta, Jason Doolittle, Christy Avery, and Brandon Luke for being our $100 a month subscribers. You guys are awesome. Thank you to all of our Patreon subscribers for doing all the things that you do for us. Mostly the ability to do this research, for instance. It's from you guys. The internet that streams, the cameras, the iPads, the microphones, all of it's from you. And you guys make this show what it is, and we are just happy that we get to lead it. And, you know, I have to say, the thing that I've heard, the fallout of this League of Liberty episode, which if you want to hear the thing that everybody in the Liberty movement is talking about, you've got to be a Patreon subscriber, $5 a month, and you can go and listen to the League of Liberty episode, episode 6, and you'll hear what everybody's talking about. But the Patreon subscribers that have contacted me, you know, the message time and time again is thank you for creating a community where I feel like I fit. You know, as opposed to I didn't think that any libertarians out there were my people. And I'm so glad that you guys have started the podcast because you're my people. The Discord people are my people. The Facebook group, those are my people. So join our community at wearelibertarians.com. So we want to make a connection. There's 7,000 of you that listen, and we know a few hundred. So we'd love to make a connection with you. So please join our stuff at wearelibertarians.com, starting with Patreon. We give you all kinds of bonus content. There was 20 extra minutes on the show. You didn't hear that 20 extra minutes because you didn't pony up to help pay for what you love. $5 a month. That's not that much at all. Come on. What is even $5 anymore, Harry? What's a $10 a month to you? Like going out to dinner was $16 tonight. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Skip one meal and make a difference in the world, right?
Yeah.
I'm not crazy.
Cup of coffee.
A cup of coffee is probably like $9 now, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Considering I got to probably buy it as soon as I get to Starbucks, yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening on this episode. Thursday, I've got like two episodes I'm recording Thursday. I'm going to surprise you. I'm not going to tease it. Two very cool episodes coming up later this week, and we'll talk to you then. Thanks. Bye, everybody.